Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
And we're live. You're one of those dudes that rocks two phones.
No. This is an iPod Touch because this phone is broken. So, like, I can't listen to music on this phone anymore. So I just bought an iPod Touch. I'm not that dude. No, this is just, it looks like I'm that, like this is my burner. But no, it's just a
Well, there's a lot of people that just love fucking around with a bunch of different pieces of electronics. So I carry a few of them.
No, I prefer one. It's just when I went to the Verizon to go, can I have a new phone since it was cracked? They were like, okay, that'll be $700. And I was like, no, it won't be. I will wait until my contract is up.
What's wrong with it? It's cracked?
The screen is cracked, which doesn't bother me, but somehow I'm really hard on everything, as my wife will attest. And
Oh shit. Yeah,
not in a Ray Rice way, let's be clear. But the jack is all fucked up, so I can't hear things in anymore.
In a Ray Rice way will be a statement for a long time now.
Yeah. No, yeah, until somebody else knocks two of their wives out in an elevator. Yeah.
Like Michael Vicking your dog.
Yeah, yeah. That's a
Yeah, that whole scenario is leading to so many different people getting in trouble for domestic violence and reports of domestic violence. And
yeah, man.
Anthony Johnson, one of the fighters in the UFC, got suspended just because there was just the possibility that maybe something happened. So there's an inquiry. I mean,
there's a sea change. We're going through a sea change right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's all about, I think, because I've talked about this a little bit before, that it used to be you only knew the shit that you knew that was directly in front of you, that you wanted information you either sought out or your friends brought to you.
Mm-hmm.
But now on Facebook and Twitter, people are like finding out about Ray Rice who were like, I didn't know there was a thing called the NFL. You know what I mean? like everybody's getting everybody's shit, so that the NFL has had domestic violence for, you know, since the dawn of the NFL. And not that it's any worse than regular society, but they've had it. But now it's at the point where people who never were paying attention to the NFL are noticing it.
Also, people are going and looking through the pasts of a lot of these different guys. And
yeah,
I think whenever you're dealing with a bunch of like super athletes who are also involved in an incredibly aggressive sport, and you add in head trauma, repeated head trauma. And a lot of them, like Ray Rice has said, that's how he was raised. Or that, no, he wouldn't say it. Was it Peterson?
Yeah,
Peterson. Adrian Peterson said that's how he was raised.
Was he raised beat. Getting knocked the fuck out?
In an elevator?
Yeah, yeah.
That was know. Ray Rice. That no, was no, Peterson. Peterson.
Yeah, I mean, I've pulled a switch off a tree because I had to go get one, but I didn't have my nuts all cut up. Like, I think there's different.
His nuts cut up?
That was the kid. It was like that there was from what I read, that there was actual, like, injuries on his genital area.
Really?
That's what I, like, you know, I'm not trying to testify in a court of law, but I heard that it was like, I mean, there's abuse and there's also discipline, and that line is changing, and like I said, we're going through a sea change where everybody knows everybody's shit now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you can hide, but we all had fucked up shit happen to us by our parents, but it doesn't mean you have to pass it on to the next.
Yeah.
You don't got to pay it forward.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And I've been talking about it lately, that my parents were raised by immigrants. Immigrants that came over from Italy and Ireland. And, you know, those people that came over here in the 1920s, they were savages. I mean, they might as well have been cave people, right? They got on these shitty boats
that
floated across the ocean, took months. They got over here.
They got their name changed right away. Yeah.
And immediately they started fucking and shitting out kids, and then they raised those kids with their savage instincts.
And in a neighborhood that they're not allowed to leave because they have their accent is too thick and they eat weird food. So they're not allowed to leave that neighborhood at the point when Italians weren't considered to be white. Those people aren't white. Or, you know, like Polish people aren't white. And then eventually they lose the accents and are allowed to integrate into the rest of the city.
I had a history professor on yesterday, Thaddeus Russell, who explained that exact same thing, you know, how all these different cultures integrate into society and they're considered non-whites,
like except the Jews, for one
except for the black folks.
Yeah, we don't get to integrate in that way.
Well, it was also his take on it was the unique aspect of America is that America was the country that had this Puritan value system. Like, these people came over and they had this like really repressive value system and very repressed society, but they also had slaves, and the slaves didn't accept any of that, and then they became a part of the culture, radically influenced the art, radically influenced the language.
The slaves did. Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the most unique things about America is the African American influence and the Western Africans integrating into this really fucked up, Puritan, very repressed society. Mm-hmm. And then you see in America, like, 90% of all entertainment comes out of here. Mm-hmm. A massive amount of innovation comes out of here. Massive difference in the way we speak English as opposed to the way English people speak English. Mm-hmm. There's so many variables that came out of that. And it makes you think, like, how much of, kind of bringing it all back to the Peterson thing of beating his kids, how much of the way human beings live our lives is based just on the momentum of the people that came before us? Whether it's his parents that beat mm-hmm. him, mm-hmm. or some fucking weird puritanical society that you just unluckily were born into.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of that is, but again, there's that, I certainly understand that we, you know, like I said, all of us have fucked up things happen to us in our childhood. Some of us go, I got to put a stop to this. Like, yeah. You know, that you make the choice to go, I got to break the cycle. And sometimes it's in big ways, like I'm going to go to college. Nobody went to college. And sometimes it's like, I'm not going to slap my kid in the nuts. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I'm going to talk to him, you know? Yeah. And certainly, I was whipped as a kid by a different thing. I mean, I always say one of my grandmother's favorite stories was to talk about how she beat me with a shoe one time. And that was a Thanksgiving, everybody sit down and let's hear the beat with a shoe story. Like that was not like in therapy she told that story. It's like, hey, grandma, tell the how you beat me with a shoe story again. And everybody would laugh and, you know, and it was a good Southern time.
You know? What was the cause? What did you do that made her beat you with a shoe?
It's funny. It's the South. I said, what?
That's it?
Yeah. So call me. Say, come out.
Come out.
What? You said, don't say what to me. So,
supposed to be yes, ma'am?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
And I lived in the North, but I lived with my mom in the North, so I didn't know that wasn't a thing in the North that you couldn't say what. So I didn't know, and I felt really, like, tricked. Like, I felt entrapped. Like, nobody, give me a list of rules of how it works here in the South, and I won't do those things.
So that's funny, man. Yeah, funny.
I got beat with a shoe for saying what.
Well, kids, when they're starting to sort of find themselves, when they're starting to establish their own identity, one of the first things they do is immediately try to challenge the way you discipline them and the way you like, my daughter loves doing that. I go, you know, I'll say to her, hey, come on, we got to go do something. She goes, what? She'll like look at me, what? I'm watching TV. I go, I know you watch TV, but you got to eat.
Yeah.
It's time to eat. Yeah, no, yeah. I want to watch the show. It's not I want to watch the show. There's no,
we're not negotiating.
Yeah, this is just what's going to happen. The TV's going to get shut off.
Yeah, yeah. No,
get angry.
I stand by. I was not testing authority. I just didn't hear her.
Like,
I
just thought, just like, beaten.
I'm sorry, what? Oh, God!
It was entrapment.
It was entrapment, yeah. And then it became every year the story was told as like the Bell holiday stories.
God, that's so weird that it's fun to beat kids with shoes.
It was fun to, well, you know, and I worked out pretty well, I think.
it came out great.
But it didn't happen, here's the thing, it didn't happen every day. It wasn't like the, here's my time to get beat, but it certainly was a thing that I remember. And I'm not going to do that to my daughter. Like, you know, there's no shoe beating happening in my house.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's sick when you see, like, I saw the pictures of just his kid's leg that were beat with the switch. It's a sick thing.
Yeah.
It's like beating a kid is not the way to raise a kid.
It's not, yeah. Like, I think there's that as a, you know, as a parent, there's times when you do grab your kid, you might grab your kid because mm-hmm. you're like, don't touch that or don't do that or you're going to get hurt and I need mm-hmm. to get your attention. Right. I mean, my daughter's cool, but if I yell, she gets like, you yelled at me.
Yeah, and then
I feel bad, and I'm like, man, that's it's a different era. Yeah.
Yeah, we're raising babies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's a softer, friendlier world we're getting to.
It is, and I just, I like that. I like that aspect of it. I like that we're becoming more aware of the negative impact. I mean, if we didn't learn from the fucked up shit that our parents and grandparents did to us, then we would really be idiots. I mean, that's the whole point.
We're evolving. Yeah. We have to go, they did that, and I'm going to try to do something one better. And I think specifically the culture of athletes is that if you're a professional athlete, you've probably been coddled since you were in high school and been told, and you've been given a different set of rules to live by so that somebody who grew up with Ray Rice, who maybe came out of the same neighborhood, may not be doing the things he's doing because they work at fucking Walmart and they're not allowed to tell people what the fuck they think all the time and they're not allowed to do those things. But Ray Rice, as a professional athlete, as a star, is living by a completely different set of rules.
And what happens to a guy like that now? He's kind of fucked.
I mean, I, I mean, you know, Michael Vick was supposed to be fucked too. I think if you, there, America likes a comeback. Nobody was more fucked than Mike Tyson was when he was, you know, convicted for rape and went to jail, and he seems to come out of that okay. America likes a comeback.
That is true.
If he does the things that allow him to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I always think about Tiger Woods. America hasn't accepted him back because there were, unfortunately, you can't go to jail for cheating on your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he could have gone to jail, and then, like, people would be like, oh, he was in jail for 18 months.
Right.
Now we'll let him come back. But people are still judging him for what he did.
Could you imagine how happy women would be if a guy could go to jail for cheating on his wife?
Yeah. Oh,
they would be so excited. There would be blogs written every day where women would be recounting stories from high school asking their boyfriends to be put back in jail.
for things that happened
a decade ago.
Yes, they would be.
Professional victim crusade would be out in full force.
But you can't, since you can't do that, Tiger Woods is still walking around with his head down, like going, I said I was sorry.
I was on an airplane. It was really funny. And there was this guy and his wife, and they were in front of us. And the guy was going over the golf score. And the woman had like a golf visor on, so I guess they probably both played golf. And the guy was going over there, and he goes like this. He goes, Tiger blew it in the whatever round. I don't follow golf. I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
And she goes, psh, of course he did. Like, of course he did. Of course. What the fuck have you done? What have you done, lady? Are you really shitting on Tiger Woods, the greatest golfers the fucking planet has ever known?
He can't. Tiger, unfortunately, did not go to jail for it, so he can never really recover from it unless he, you know, his wife. If his wife had stayed with him, then they would have been like, okay, they worked it out.
Right.
Because his wife left him, as I understand, you know.
Right.
When you get to like 14, 15 women, you go, I think this isn't working out.
Yeah.
And then, but he can't, there's no thing to do. It's not like even with Kobe where like the court case ended, whether you believe it ended in the right way, it was at least resolved. So there's now I can just play. And Nike's like, okay, we'll fuck with you now. You know, you can come back in the fold, but.
And especially because Tiger is not as good as he was before then, which is really shocking.
I feel like it's mental. I think it's totally, like, that's what I'm saying. I think he knows, and I mean, I don't know Tiger Woods at all, but I just feel like that thing, I've been that guy where you're like, I fucked up and there's no way to get out of this. I just got to sit in my juices for a while and hope it passes.
Well, also, I don't think either one of us could ever understand what it's like to be A, that famous, and B, that hated.
Yes, yes. It started when you were 19.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing to me about same with professional athletes. You became famous before your brain was before you fucking still had a soft spot. You know what I mean? You weren't even full grown. Yeah, you didn't even have your man weight on you. You didn't have shoulders yet, you know? You're suddenly one of those famous people on the planet.
Yeah.
I understand why on his side, like, you know, as a kid who was a nerd and went to Stanford and his dad just made him play golf forever, that he was like, I think I'd like to have sex with lots of women. I just never had that chance. And I know I got married and that was probably a dumb idea, but I get that.
Yeah.
But then you can't, you know, he got caught.
There's also, I think, this is just speculation, but I think there's
all of this is speculation. I want to be clear about all
of this. Of course. Me as well.
Yeah.
There's a thing that goes along with being a great athlete. There's like this conqueror mentality. Mm-hmm. This, like, they can't be beaten. Mm-hmm. I mean, Muhammad Ali screaming, I'm the greatest of all time!
Yeah.
And when he did that, everybody loved it. They loved it.
I think half the people loved it and half the people thought we need to draft him into the military and force him to be our bitch.
Yeah, true.
And I don't mean, try not to say that word, but that's what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, you try not to say bitch?
I try to. I'm that guy.
Don't let them get you, bro.
No, it's not about
bitch
them.
Okay.
It's a female dog. I know, but it's also, you know, a slur for women, so yeah.
But not always. It's a lot of times a slur for men.
Well, that it's become that. Just like nigger's not always a slur for black people. It's also
it's more often a slur for black people. Yeah. But you're allowed to call him. If I say Jamie, you nigger, that's like a terrible thing to say.
I got, slow down, dude.
I got nervous even hearing it come out of my own mouth.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
But settle down, bitch. Like, that's still fun.
I'm not telling you. I'm not trying to.
But you personally.
That's my, I'm just, this is how I, you know.
They got you.
I don't, but they maybe already had me. You're not going to go in my past and be like, man, he was the bitch guy.
Look at the amount of bitches he used per day.
Yeah, and then it's really scaled back. No, it went from 3 to 0. It just went from like, I say other words, I say nigger a lot. It just, I feel like I can, but I don't say that in a way where like I would never, I would only jokingly say to my black friend, "What's up, my nigga?" I wouldn't say that. Right. I don't call him that, and I talk about. I use the word nigga on stage a lot because I'm talking about it. But I'm right. Not. So I'm not a. It's not the word police. It's just we all have our own set of rules that we establish.
I got so thrown off by your refusal of the word bitch that I forgot what it was, what my entire point was going to be.
That's my goal.
Yeah,
I've got just like a, you know, when in the cage, I got to make sure you're nervous.
No, that's a good move.
We were talking about. Muhammad Ali, yeah. I'm the greatest of all time. And mm-hmm. I was just saying that like some people loved it, some people hated it.
Yeah, well, no doubt. And the people love that conqueror mindset. They love the person yeah. who's extremely confident.
Yes,
they love like yeah. Mike Tyson when he was in his prime.
Yeah.
You know, that you know, there's something about a guy who's at his best, who thinks he could do whatever the fuck he wants, and then keeps pulling it off. The people love to see him fail,
yes.
but they also love to see him succeed.
But then some people love to hate that guy.
Oh,
you know,
no doubt.
You know, so that's their they you know, is it like it's true of all these guys? I mean, you know,
yeah.
the John Jones thing. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, the people yeah. also get, why is he so good?
Oh, they hate that.
Why I don't like that he's so good.
Yeah, yeah. There's no doubt. There's an issue with that. But I speculate on what it's like to be that guy yeah. when you are that good at something like mm-hmm. golf, like a guy like Tiger Woods, who is arguably the greatest golfer of all time, or right up there with him. I mean, for the time when he was on a, I'm not a golf historian, yeah. but as it's but been no, explained
he had like
to me,
a, yeah, he had like a 10-year run where it was just like that. It was almost, I think it was unparalleled.
Yeah,
where he was going to be competitive every weekend that he played golf. Like
yeah,
he was going to. He was always going to make the cut. And golfers, I know enough that there's wild swings. Like a guy who wins one week may not make the cut the next week because mm-hmm. it's mostly mental. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a lot physical, but it's also you have to hold yourself together and, mm-hmm. and recover. And so there's wild swings in golf, and he had an amazing consistency that even if he didn't win, he was in the top 10, you know?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden that went away.
It's
amazing.
Because it's mental, I think. Well, like all sports is mental. Everything is mental. But I think with golf especially, like, if you're not mentally in the thing, you mm-hmm. can't do the thing. It's not about your physical gifts. He's still strong. He's still bigger than everybody.
He does have physical issues too now, though, doesn't
he? Does have
back
a lot
problems and knee problems and stuff.
Yeah, he does. He does. And but a lot of that stuff, and you know, but he's still not too old to. I mean, you know, Tiger's at the age that most golfers are sometimes in their prime, like in that like sort of late 30s. This is when he should be good.
You
know,
right,
like, you know,
right.
not back, but you know, he's also he was the first golfer to put muscle on and really work out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, if you put too much muscle on, you can fuck yourself up eventually.
Yeah, well, that also fucks up your coordination sometimes, like with pool players. I play a lot of pool, and pool players, one of the things that happens to them is they lift a lot of weights. If they start lifting weights, they start getting like really tense.
Pool players lift weights?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a thing?
Yeah. Pool players are trying to be more fit because being more fit gives you more energy.
Oh, yeah,
to play
yeah,
longer
yeah.
matches.
I understand that.
And you can maintain your concentration. I know it seems counterintuitive.
I get that you would like want to be in good shape, but being buff to play pool seems like that would be. That
not even buff, but strong.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
your core and your, like a lot of times pool players develop back issues because
oh,
you're
yeah.
bending over all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So just the idea that you're lifting weights to keep your body strong, but in doing so, sometimes you create all this tension,
mm-hmm.
and then that tension fucks up your feel for where the ball's going. And I would imagine a guy like Tiger started getting pretty buff. You know, there's a lot of that in like how you knock a ball around on a golf course as well, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
just that,
yes.
that delicate touch.
Yeah, that it's very, that it's a lot of fast twitching and mm-hmm. a lot of tension and releasing. And yeah.
yeah there was a guy named Willie Hoppe. He's like a famous billiards player from the early 1900s, like one of the all-time greats, and he wouldn't even drive a car. Wouldn't even do anything with his hands until he got to that table. Just didn't touch anything. Just like would eat his food and just no tension at all. He wanted his arms to be delicate and loose, so he had a full control of where the ball was going at all times.
I wish I could do that with the comedy. Like, I can't talk. I just got to sit here and be in a yeah yeah.
Some people are like that, man. Some people rest their voice and shit, and they drink tea.
Well, I mean,
with
I do like to
lemon.
Like before the show, I do like to do a thing where it's like just don't talk to me for an hour. If it's a big show, I do like to like,
right.
I like to shut it down.
I do the opposite.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. When it's a big show, I like to talk a lot and have fun.
Oh, yeah.
So that when I go out there, I'm loose.
You're already...
and I'm having a good time. You
yeah.
know?
I guess it depends. Last night I did Largo, and I had the other comics backstage, and we were talking. But I think it was because I wanted to do that because there was a lot of industry people out there, and I just didn't want to focus too much on the fact that, like, oh, this is just my career. You know? I just
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
People paying attention to you and staring at you. What can we do with him?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can
yeah.
we get money to go in his general direction?
Yeah,
can we
yes.
sign him up for this? Is he a lead?
Yes, exactly.
Is he the head guy?
Is he the friend of the guy?
Is he the friend? Yeah, is he the neighbor, the wacky neighbor that Cosmo Kramer's his way into the room?
Or is he the feature guy who comes in for 6 episodes and everybody loves but doesn't want to see him too much? Yeah, it could be that. We'll see what
happens. We can't overstate his welcome.
Yeah.
You had an awesome show, man. You had a really good show, a groundbreaking show.
Thanks, man.
That for some reason, some fucking suits decided they should take it from the very profitable FX and move it to FXXXXX, which nobody even was informed was a real channel.
I'm better for the show having happened. I certainly feel like a little bit the show getting canceled in such a way made it a better story for people. Like it's now become like Woodstock. Like more people claim they were there than were there. Like, you know, like I watched it occasionally. Like people were like, I was there every night and I couldn't. But it's like, but now people, when it was gone, people got more. It got more attention from it being gone, and so I really appreciate that. But yeah, it was a crazy.
Well, you were known for being a stand-up comic, and then all of a sudden you hear, oh, FX is doing a show with Kamau Bell, and it's being produced by Chris Rock.
Yeah.
So whenever you say Chris Rock is attached to something,
we all get excited.
One of the greatest comedians of all time is producing this show. This fucking show's got to be fantastic.
Absolutely.
And you, what you did, I thought that was really unique, is you tackled some pretty interesting subjects. And some things that you never see discussed, like rape jokes. I mean, you had that thing with Lindy West. Is that her name?
Yeah.
And Jim Norton.
Is that his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
I just didn't want to fuck her name up.
No, I appreciate it.
And you guys got into like some complex subject matter for television.
Yeah, for late night television.
Yeah, which is just, I mean, usually it's like, my new song is all about love. And
I never wanted a late night talk show. It just ended up being that was the format that they called it. Like, I just wanted a show.
Right.
And they said it comes on at after 11. I'm like, can it come on at 8? Can it come on? But there's that thing, if there's a person who's standing on a stage talking to an audience about the world, then it's a late night talk show. And I was always sort of rebelling against that format and trying to make it just a show that I would want to watch.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think you did a good job at doing that.
Yeah.
It's when a show is on a network, there's always going to be like a bunch of people that are also trying to change the direction of it. Like you got your ideas, and then you got your producer's ideas, which add hopefully to your ideas, the director's ideas, which add, and then you got executives, you got a lot of fucking cooks in the kitchen.
Yes, you absolutely do. And that coming from the world of stand-up and also the world doing my, like, the solo show that got me the thing, I had friends helping me and I had people help me, but it was ultimately, it was my words were the thing that were coming out of my mouth. And my idea, people could say, you should do this, and I'd be like, oh, think about it. But when you're in that meat grinder environment, especially when it became daily, there's so many people who are sort of yelling things at you. And at some point, just for lack of, if you can't top their idea, you sort of go, I guess we'll do that, you know? Or if somebody goes, like I just said this yesterday, like somebody will be like, oh, you know what? I was thinking we could do a cold open. Well, I don't really want to do a cold open because that's just not the kind of show I want. Well, I think if we have a big guest on, we'll do the cold open. Well, I don't really want to do that. Well, I asked the guest, he wants to do it. Okay, I guess we'll do it. And then the guest shows up and you go, we're doing this cold open. He's like, I don't want to do it. And you go, oh, but we already bought the whipped cream. And and suddenly in this position of like, why are we doing this? there's this machine of television and this machine that suddenly you're just, I felt like I was either, it was like a meat grinder, and either I was putting the meat in the grinder or I was the meat for the grinder.
Right.
And in that format, when it was daily, a lot of days I was the meat. Like I was.
Well, I think it gets to a point where you're like a Jon Stewart type dude where you get to decide what goes in the grinder.
Yeah, and I think that Stewart, I read a lot of stuff about him. It took him 2.5 years to get the Daily Show. Like, when we think of the Daily Show, we're really thinking about the last 10 years of the Daily Show. Yes. We're not thinking about that first, when he first got there and took over from Craig Kilborn.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a wacky afternoon parody show of like news event show, you know.
Yeah, it was more of like a pop culture type thing. It was almost.
It was like a parody of those. They don't really do these anymore, but those afternoon shows that you see, like, you know, Evening Magazine, like those things from like the
80s.
Yeah. Where it's like, we went to the florist show and found this new florist too. Blah blah blah. And John took it a more political direction.
Yeah,
but he had to. From everything I read, Comedy Central didn't want it, but he was in a position where he wasn't being told he was the face of the network and that all the pressure was on him. Because he had South Park and he had all the other stuff on Comedy Central. Whereas on FX, on FXX, it was, they had one night of original programming that included me, when it was like The League or It's Always Sunny or Jim Jeffries. Every other night, it would be like, somebody be at home watching a Mad About You rerun. and enjoying it, and then suddenly a black guy would come on screaming about the events of the day, and I get they'd be like, whoa, 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 no, 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 I was enjoying Paul Reiser from the 90s.
A black guy.
A black guy.
You just said that, like, in a way, this... That is that something you are acutely aware of, like how they were programming it? Like,
because I just think I'm aware of the audience. If you're watching a Mad About You rerun, and I'm not in any way insulting Mad About You, but I'm saying if you're like,
I'll insult it.
Okay, that's fine. I just don't.
Shit's bad for America.
Good for Paul Reiser's bank account. I just don't have any opinion. It's that's your thing. If you're watching a rerun of some sitcom right. from the 90s and you're enjoying it, which you can, and then suddenly I come on screen. And I'm the I'm basically the opposite of that. I'm a guy who's talking about right now. I'm not talking about what happened in the 90s. And I'm a black guy. And you're just watching a bunch of white people on the Upper West Side of Manhattan talk about, well, we go, how are we going to get to the coffee shop if we don't bob it up? And then I come on there talking about homophobia. You know, like, I get there, you're like, this is, it's a hard transition. Whereas if there's a network that's programmed where I'm a part of the package, then it segues in that, things will segue one into the other.
Well, yeah, not only a guy that's, you know, a polar opposite of the 90s, current guy, but a progressive black guy.
Yeah.
Who's
yes.
intelligent, who's talking not, about some controversial and, you
and know. And it's hard to, like, it becomes hard to box. It's not like I'm doing, oh, this is what I expect black guys to do.
Right.
and I'm doing things where, you know, where I'm being vulnerable or also talking about issues that I don't know anything about and I'm trying to learn about them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's huge. And that's, I thought was an interesting approach of your show that you don't really see too much when it comes to controversial issues. Like a guy who, instead of pretending to be the expert in everything, the voice of reason, mm-hmm. you kind of like laid back and asked questions and tried to piece it together on the spot.
That was the man on the street stuff we did was always the stuff people responded to the best, in addition to the debates we did. But like when I would go on the street and talk to people, and we would make comedy out of what we were talking about, whether we agreed it or not, just out of like me talking to them about whatever the issues were. And that stuff, I always felt like my comedy, doesn't work if I pretend to be the smartest guy in the room. Like, right. people say I'm smart, which sometimes when people say that, they go, you're smart. And they sort of do it.
And shake your head. Like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, yeah. Or also, like, industry, like, we don't know what to do with that. But so I will take that. I certainly like to read and know stuff like you do. But I'm not the smartest of my friends. I'm the funny one of my friends. You know what I mean? I'm the one who they're like, oh, Kamel, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
You know, here, read this. And that's the place that it works best for me, not to go on TV and be like, let me explain. Unless I'm talking about something about being black in America, then I feel like, I've got some research. I've done some...
I've done quite a bit of reading. Or being a comic or anything that you're an expert in.
Yeah. There's areas where I feel like I will hold my opinion, but, you know, for a lot of stuff, I'm trying to see... We don't have to know everything all the time.
When I watched your show, the first thing I thought, besides that this is a really good show and really unique, is that you should be on the internet. I'm like, why doesn't he just do this fucking show on the internet where he could be himself 100%?
Yeah.
Because you can get numbers on the internet that are just as big as any number you got on FXXXXX.
Yeah, definitely the numbers we got. I think it was called Historically Low. I think I can do that on the internet.
But it seems like there's you developed a following.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really a lot of positive reactions to what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you could carry that onto the internet smoothly, and it would just take off like wildfire.
Well, that right now, there was a lot of things that happened when the show got canceled. Like, we were, because me, my wife, and my daughter moved to New York for the show. We'd never lived in New York, never thought about living in New York. My wife is born and raised in Monterey, California, doesn't want to be out of Northern California. So we moved, and I lived there, so we moved to the show. So then the show got canceled. And then there was this period of, like, I don't know, what do you call it, crippling depression? Like, where you're just like, what happens next? What do I do?
Right.
Do we stay here? Do we leave? And then my wife got pregnant. She's pregnant with our second kid.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. And so it was this thing about, like, well, okay, now what do we do? Are we going to raise a kid? Like, are we going to have a baby in New York? And that just sounded like a reality show I didn't want to watch. Like, you know, can these couple have a baby? No, we can't. Not in Manhattan. And so we just moved back to the Bay, like, 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in my life has been like, okay, like, I just feel like I can breathe again. And so,
what do you like more about San Francisco than New York?
I think New York is the greatest city in the world. I'm not trying to. I think it is, but it's also a hard city to live in. If I feel like if you're from there, born and raised, you can do it, or if you move there and have the means to live the life you want, or you're 22. You know, like, I feel like those. But I'm not any of those things at this point. The Bay, you get all the good stuff that New York has, all the culture, all the ideas, all the diversity. But there's just more wide open space, and there's more conversation. There's more, like, you know, it feels like you can, it's an area where people move there to be curious.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, they move there to be like, I'm going to see if I can turn my .com idea into, you know, like, it, or people go, I'm going to go there to be gay as I want to be and find out if I can be too gay. You know
what
I mean?
They also go, this is a $4 million house?
Well, yeah, we live in Berkeley.
What
so,
the fuck?
Yeah. I lived in San Francisco and moved back, and my joke is that San Francisco was like, now you live in Berkeley. Like, you know, like, I can't live in San Francisco anymore.
Nobody can.
No, the city is only 7x7. People don't realize that. It's tiny.
Yeah.
And at some point, I think Gavin Newsom, the mayor, realized, wait, this could all be high-end real estate. The entire city could be high-end real estate.
That's kind of what it is now.
Yeah, so it's become a thing where unless you live there for 40 years and own your property, people are being kicked out of, like, old people are being kicked out of apartments they've lived in for their entire lives because landlords are turning their buildings into condos, and it's really a big deal there.
I lived in San Francisco during the Vietnam War. I lived in San Francisco when I was a little kid.
Oh, that's what you said. That was so like you were in the Vietnam War.
I was in Nam.
Yeah, that's a funny way. Not I lived there in 72. I lived there during the Vietnam War. I was an objector, conscientious objector, as a four-year-old.
I was seven.
Yeah.
I knew better.
Yeah.
But it shaped the way I look at the world. Very, very, very much so.
It's too open sometimes. I think people, like, San Francisco gets so liberal, it gets conservative, like, where they get very tunnel vision in their liberalness. So that's, but I think for me, that's, I've learned to understand that, and that's a part of why I think my act of up the way it is. I've learned to fuck with that.
Yeah.
So I don't, it's not perfect, but it just feels like you can breathe out there, and you still get all the stuff. Like, you're not missing any of the concerts or any of the movies or any of the food of New York.
Right.
But you get to, like, everything's not 400 feet tall.
That is an interesting thing, though, isn't it? How, like, you can get so liberal that it almost becomes conservative because you become so dogmatic in your ideas.
Because liberals get very focused on their version of liberalism.
Yes, and aggressive about it.
Yes, yeah.
You know, that's a big thing about it, is it's not about kindness and love and understanding so much as about pushing their idea with kindness, love, and understanding should be. And if you disagree, you're a fucking male pig, patriarch, asshole, white privilege, piece of shit, die in a fire.
Yeah,
you know,
it gets
pretty aggressive.
I agree with the white privilege part, but
I do too.
I think that's, people don't realize, and that's what the show was trying to do, that people get caught up in, like, for example, my friends, I have militant black friends who are like, militant black is the thing, and they sort of ignore, like, the gay rights side of it, and suddenly somebody starts talking about gay rights, like, no, that's not important. It's militancy, black militancy. And then there's gay people who are like, no, immigration's not important. It's about gay. And so people get caught in their lane, and the show and my life is about, no, all of us on the right side of the issues need to get in the same hot tub together and figure it out. You know, like, we need to sort of talk. We're all on the right side.
You had me up into a hot tub. That could be a problem.
You don't
depends
get
on
tub?
What gay dudes and what militants are in there. You could have a fucking brawl in a hot tub.
Who has a brawl in a hot tub?
And it can happen.
Have you ever seen a brawl in a hot tub?
I never saw a fucking guy knock a girl out in an elevator before the Ray Rice video, but apparently, but it's possible.
I'm sure there's lots of footage of guys getting, of people getting knocked out in elevators, but I think hot tub brawl. Somebody Google hot tub brawl and see what comes up.
There's a very famous story about a guy. I don't know if you heard this one. A few years ago, he was a newscaster, and he was a gay guy that was in the closet. He was on, like, Oklahoma TV or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of those, thanks, Bob. All right. Today's top story. You know, one of those fucking weird guys. He woke up with a dead guy next to him. They had been doing crystal meth all night and having gay sex. And the guy had a belt around his neck. And the guy had asphyxiated while doing autoerotic asphyxiation. And he passed out. They passed out together in this hot tub. So he woke up, you know, in the hot tub. Methed out, doing pills with a blue guy next to him with a belt around his neck.
Wow.
You know, I mean.
But again, not a fight.
Not a fight. Allegedly.
They were all in it together.
Muskegon hot tub brawl leads to arrest, assault charge. But that's Michigan, man. They fight over everything. Those are crazy white people. That's a different kind of human being.
I love that you Googled hot tub brawl and found something.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's
of
out
course.
There,
yeah,
bro.
Everything's
it's
out there. Now I know. But I said that because I wanted to see, and ta-da! I knew that. I knew it was coming. Of course, there's been a fight.
It's probably a style of fighting.
A style of fighting. it'll be the next UFC hot tub brawling.
Yeah, people use techniques. You got to push off the back of the tub. Yeah, it's very important.
The pH balance of the water makes a big difference.
Don't get it in your mouth. It'll affect your breathing. There's a lot going on with hot tub brawling.
Hot tub brawling.
But
it's funny. One of my favorite, just it reminded me of this, is like one of my favorite things about San Francisco And just favorite things I ever saw in San Francisco was like, so gay community, crystal meth has been a problem in the gay community.
And or so an awesome thing.
Yeah, depends on, depends on how it's worked out for
when
you.
When you take it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Depends. Somebody out there is having the Keith Richards version of it, like, crystal meth is working for me. You know, somebody out there.
It can't be bad for everybody. Otherwise, well, they'd stop selling it.
Is that really how it works?
Yes!
Is that why McDonald's is open? Because some people are eating it and feeling...
I had a fucking Egg McMuffin this morning. It was delicious.
You gonna have one tonight?
No!
You gonna have one tomorrow?
That's the key. The Egg McMuffins, unlike crystal meth, do not require you to continue using them all day to maintain a state of normalcy.
Maybe. I think McDonald's would like you to use them every day.
I'm sure they would, but they stop selling them after 10:30 a.m.
That's
just because
they understand
people from becoming junkies.
They understand. That's right. You can't get the Egg McMuffin after 10:30 because we don't want to cause a problem in America.
Yeah, it could be.
There was a billboard in San Francisco, like on the bus shelter, like in the gay neighborhood where I had to. I used to take the bus from there because I'd hang out. And there was a billboard, and it was a guy. Like all it was a billboard that said don't do crystal meth or something, and the image of the billboard was a guy. I'll just do it like so. It's like you're standing over his shoulder, and he's doing this. And it was implying that he was getting fucked in the ass and didn't know it because he was on crystal meth.
What?
It was the crazy. He's just like, ah! Like, he's got this horrified look on his face because it's from the. And he's got his shirt off, and it's from the perspective of, like, oh, some guy is fucking him in the ass.
So he's waking up?
Yeah, in the middle of, like, the crystal meth haze. He realizes, oh my God, I'm getting fucked.
I'm making poor choices!
Exactly! And it was, like, a thing at the bus shelter right next to the Safeway. And I was just like, I love this city. Like,
what a ridiculous ad, though. Yeah, like, who greenlit that?
It got my attention. I haven't done crystal since. Wow. Before.
Good for you.
Thanks,
I'm glad,
man.
You learned from wacky ads like that.
Yeah, no, sounds like a bad scene.
Yes, I think San Francisco is like, if not the smartest, one of the smartest towns in the world.
I mean, I think it gets a lot of credit for that, but I think that it can be, but I also think that if you, like, the comedy crowds get attention for being smart,
yeah.
I think that can be true, but it's also... You can also walk into a San Francisco club and be like, where did these people come from? You know what I mean?
Tourists.
Like, there's tourists, but there's also just a lot of, like, you know, and I'm going to try bridge and tunnel. There's a lot of, like, people coming into San Francisco. And there's
Stockton
also
crowd.
The original San Francisco people who live there are just people. Like, you will,
right.
You will go to neighborhoods in San Francisco where, like, you're like, these people don't know it's the gayest city on earth. You know, this dude's a plumber. He doesn't know that this is, like, the most progressive city in the on the planet.
Do you think that this whole, what would you call it, gentrification? Is that what they call it?
When I would call it that.
These
yeah.
people buy up the real estate. And it's going through the roof.
Where they create neighborhoods where neighborhoods weren't before or should have been, and they didn't want to make a neighborhood.
Is that what can you do? What can they do to stop that? I mean, almost nothing. The amount of money, the wealth that's in San Francisco,
the concentrated wealth makes it. I mean, unless we want to storm the streets and get all like Ukraine in there, the concentrated wealth makes it damn near impossible. Because not the first wave, but when I moved to San Francisco in the 90s, there was the first dot com bubble, and they tried to gentrify the Mission. And back then, what they were doing was tearing down stuff and building new things. And the neighborhood flexed on them and said, and the Mission's a historically Latino neighborhood. And the neighborhood flexed and said, no, you can't do this. And I don't know how they did it, but they stopped them. But now the money is so much bigger and the bubble didn't burst. And it's Google money and Facebook money, which is going to last for the end of time. Time being 10 years from now. But that the money's so concentrated that, and they're now being sneaky about how they gentrify. They don't tear the buildings down. They make the buildings look like they're the same buildings. They just redo the inside.
Yeah.
So it becomes invisible. So you just go, you don't know that the neighbors gentrified, but then you go, man, there sure are a lot more wine bars around here than there used to be, but they don't look like that from the outside.
And you go into them and they're just unbelievably renovated.
Yes.
Like, whoa,
yeah.
What the fuck did you guys do?
But they've kept the outsides in such a way that you don't, that it's more invisible. But yeah, the Google, like there's the Google bus in San Francisco. Like all the Googleites used to live in like Mountain View down by Palo Alto. But then Google just did this thing that's become very controversial. They have a free bus that will take you from certain San Francisco neighborhoods straight to Google so that the 25-year-old people who work at Google can live in the cool hip city but then get to work for free. But what that does is that every stop on the Google bus line, it changes the neighborhood because people want to live next to the Google bus line. And so then suddenly neighborhoods that, like, it would have been a poor neighborhood or a struggling neighborhood, people are buying the property there and renovating things and then pushing the other people out of the neighborhood. So in a sense, the Google bus, which is good because it keeps cars off the highway.
Right.
And it also helps Google out because people get on the bus and start working right away. So
right.
Like, people go, it's great, we have free Wi-Fi. No, that's so you can work. So it takes cars off the road. It's ostensibly helps people. It keeps people from living in places they don't want to live. but it changes the neighborhood and kicks people out of the neighborhood. It's a very super controversial thing that San Francisco is dealing with right now.
San Francisco's wealth, for people who don't know, is in this weird, stupid category that doesn't even make any sense. I have some friends that live in Atherton, and they rent a house there, but the house is worth $15 million. And it's not worth $15 million.
No, no, no. You don't.
It's just not.
You don't walk in and go, "This is a $15 million house."
No, dude, yeah. You don't even walk in and go, "This is a $1 million house." It's just a house. It's a fucking normal. I mean, yes, it's worth. If I had a guess, like if you put it in a decent neighborhood in, Studio City, it's a $2 million house.
Yeah.
It's a very nice house.
Yeah,
but it's $15 million.
Yes,
it doesn't make any sense. And I'm walking around. And I'm like, how is this house worth $15 million? This doesn't make any sense to me. It's got a normal backyard. It doesn't have a view of the fucking the Continental Divide.
It doesn't have a wiffle ball stadium.
No, it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. The money there is so over the top.
It's the concentrated wealth artificially inflates the values of everything around it, which means people who've lived there forever suddenly are being told you can't live here anymore.
They can't afford it. Yeah, you would have to have... Look, $15 million is like, what is the fucking mortgage on something like that?
Yeah, yeah, you can't... Yeah, it's like that empty...
It's like $100,000 a month or something.
How much money do you have to keep a $15 million house?
I think the mortgage would be like probably close to $100,000 a month. So that's $1,200,000 a fucking year mortgage.
Yes, yes.
That's insane.
And you haven't... What if the sink breaks? You know, there's all the... Yeah. You know, you can't. You
or
know,
the earth moves.
Or the earth moves. Yeah.
That's a big one.
And all the insurance because you're in a your house is built on a fault line.
Oh.
And, you know, so yeah, then it has completely. It sucks, but there's no it's capitalism. You know, capitalism unchecked is not necessarily the best thing. You know,
well, what's the option though? If you say capitalism unchecked,
it's capitalism. Sort of, it will always. Capitalism, I feel like, unless you sort of go, hey, maybe we should, you know, we should keep an area for people who've lived here. We shouldn't allow people to get kicked out of their houses if they live. Old people should never be kicked out of their house if they're paying the rent that they were agreed to pay when they moved in 800 years ago. That's the things that have to be. People should be allowed to buy whatever property they want to buy that's for sale. But it's also a thing where you shouldn't make it easier on those people and harder on the people who actually don't have the ability to go live somewhere else.
Yeah, it gets really tricky when they run out of places they can go to, too. Because when you're, especially if you have a rent control type situation.
Yeah.
Once, if they boot you out of that, good fucking luck finding a place for $800 a month.
No, and also, and as if you're an old person, you know, your family may not live in the area, and you have to go, you're suddenly moving all your shit? Like, you're just like, you know, like, what, who wants to do that? My mom lives in Bloomington, Indiana. She pays $600 a month, I think, for a 2-bedroom townhouse.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's not nice, but it's for $600 a month. It's nice, you know, like it's a, you know. And I think about that, and there's no way anywhere in the Bay Area that she could ever, like, we talk about her moving out there, and I'm like, I'm not making that FX money anymore. We have to figure out, I got to get something else going before we can move you out here, because you're not going to find anything for $600 a month.
Berkeley's nice, though. I like Berkeley.
Berkeley is
real
nice.
Calm. It's like it's an interesting sort of environment. It's a super lefty, very hippie environment, but...
It's also very sort of young and a little bit gutter punk too. It's it's funny, like if you go down by the downtown Berkeley BART station, it is very gutter punk and like sort of kids spare changing, and you know, it's a very sort of it's a place that those people hang out. And I was down there with my daughter pushing the stroller, and I felt like the weirdo, like the guy pushing the baby stroller. Like, where'd that guy get a baby from? Oh, that's weird. Is he selling it? Like, I felt like I'm the weirdo. You guys are all in the streets.
Well, San Francisco and the Bay Area itself is so accepting of like homeless people, and it's weird.
So much fun. I forgot how many, like living in New York for 2 years. New York people think New York has a homeless problem. It's like, no, you guys have about 12 dudes. I met them all while I was there. They're all very nice, but like San Francisco, it's thick with it. You know, the Bay Area, because it's temperate, and we have social services for those people, and that is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I lived in a neighborhood where I knew all the homeless people, and they were all pretty cool. There was rarely a time where I had a problem with it, you know.
Right.
And they just there do their thing. And you know what's also great? The hidden benefit of homeless people. When you walk out of in San Francisco, there's a culture of if you walk out of a restaurant and you have leftovers and you don't want to eat them, you just put them on a trash can and you blink and they're gone.
Right, right.
And you feel like you did something.
Yeah.
I'm a good person. Whereas it's not that culture. I'm glad to be back in that culture. You feel like I've done a good thing. I'm a charitable individual because I didn't finish my spaghetti.
That's funny. Do you think that, I think the real issue is a lot of these people are, like, they have mental issues.
Yes.
And the mental health care in this country just doesn't it's not up to snuff. I mean, these people are just not being taken care of the way a culture should probably look after its citizens.
Well, yeah, and I think I don't know this for sure, but from what I heard in the Bay Area, when Reagan was governor, he opened up the doors of the mental hospital.
It wasn't just when he was governor, when he was president. When he became president, he changed the what the requirements are.
Yeah.
And, you know, said, oh, you guys could feed yourself? You could put a fork to your mouth? Yeah. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, yeah, you're free.
We're not
you're
paying.
Free.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, mental health issues are serious. And
forget homeless people. America's probably number one issue is mental health issues.
It's a big one.
I mean, you know, when we go to take it back to the football player thing, the NFL rookie symposium should involve sitting down with a therapist and talking about, okay, you're about to make a lot of money and you've had everything in your life, but let's try to figure out what in your past is going to lead you to make bad decisions in the future.
That's all well and good, but the reality is you're never going to be able to change anybody out of a fucking conversation. The reality of being a guy who's poor to being a guy who's a fucking NFL superstar making millions of dollars. Boy, what a transition.
I don't mean one conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's.
Constant.
You know, yeah, I feel like. I mean, I actually feel like every black person in America, I'll take those reparations, free therapy. just give every black person in America a free therapy session once a week for the rest of their life. It'll change America.
White people need therapy, too.
Yeah, I know, I can't speak for you people. I'm just speaking for you.
Wow, how dare you? You people. It's you people.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
I'm married to one of you people, so I can say that.
Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank God someone's doing it.
Yeah.
I think also the real problem with NFL players, the unaddressed problem of mental health, is also the fucking concussions.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing about concussions is it creates depression, and it makes guys way more susceptible to being impulsive, violence, and you're so used to a violent world, a world of constant collisions and explosions and pushing people off you and screaming at people on the line, and that world, it's difficult to transition between that world and the calm world of domestic living.
And I think that's true. Sometimes when people say that, they make it sound like that's an excuse for domestic abuse.
Mm-mm.
That, like, well, these are violent men in a violent game. And I feel like, yeah, that's true, but they still have to be human beings outside of that. They can't take, no doubt. And I don't know the challenge of that. I'm not saying it's easy, but I certainly feel like you still have to walk around in society, you know, unless we just house NFL players on a separate property and, you know, like, and to sort of keep them away from general population. But
I think it's something that the people that are involved in the sport, from high school to college coaches to everyone, it's something that's not addressed, but it's one of the most difficult aspects of competitive athletic sports, combat sports, as it were.
Yeah.
I consider football a combat sport.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I mean, these guys are fucking running at each other full clip. If that's not combat, what the fuck is?
It absolutely is.
Yeah, so I think that just the realities of dealing with being a combat athlete or any sort of explosive athlete, you're dealing with physical contact on a regular basis, call it whatever you want. It's hard to be a functional member of a calm, staid, normal society on top of doing that at the same time.
Especially like you're saying, like, to me, I always think about the fact that these guys, again, it's like the professional athletes have been since high school, now since 7th or 8th grade, been sort of, the rules have been changed for
them.
And they've been coddled, and you don't have to go
athlete
to class.
Athlete privilege.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't have to go to class. You don't have to do these things.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they don't get the life skills that a regular person would get because they've been sort of segregated from regular society. And you give somebody $1 million and tell them that they're the best, and like the same thing. I mean, I feel the same way about comedy. Sometimes I come off stage after a good set, I feel like I am the best thing this world has ever seen.
Well, that's definitely an issue with like sitcom stars.
Yeah, you know,
that's a big issue, man. I've been around people that like run their own shows. They have their own sitcom. They're yelling at the producer and yelling at the other actors and yelling at everyone. And I mean, there's 100 stories of, like, you know, Roseanne when she was running the Roseanne show, Brett Butler when she was on Grace Under Fire.
Yeah.
There's like, you can go on and on and on. There's a million different stories that have to do with people that become the star of a show. It's the Kamau Bell show.
Yeah, I mean,
everybody shut the fuck up. This is my show.
Well, I'm sure if we brought in some of the staff from Totally Biased, they would tell you stories about me like that. You know, and not that I... It's when you are put in a position where you're the focus of everybody's attention for all day long, every day. I can say it tweaks your head. Like it tweaked my head in a way that I certainly was not. I don't think I Brett Butler did ever. I don't think I Roseanne did. But and maybe I should have sometimes. I should have, because I think sometimes you have to sort of go, everybody pay attention. Mm-hmm. But I certainly was not the best version of myself. And that's one thing that when I left, I felt like, all right, I can sort of figure, I can return back to that dude who got the show in the first place.
Well, also a producer who comes up with a wacky idea that would make you look bad. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
If he talks you into doing this wacky idea and you're like, this wacky idea sucks. No, listen. Yeah. We talked this through. Just give it a shot. Come on, play with us here. Play ball with us.
Yeah.
We're going to let you do that thing on Rape Jokes. We'd like you to do this thing where you put fucking blackface on. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
You do it and it doesn't work. You look like a fucking idiot.
Yes.
And they don't feel anything.
And they don't.
Nothing.
I think there's also this thing where people think that there's a I think there's this weird thing in the entertainment industry now where some people like they still don't get the internet and they go, well, you like it used to be Johnny Carson went on Tonight Show and did a stupid thing that made him feel stupid. Nobody ever could even you wouldn't foresee it again.
Yeah,
it was gone. It was in the annals of time. Yeah. But I'm like, no, this exists forever. Like, if you make me do something stupid that I don't like to do, I will be hearing about it for the rest of my life on some level.
Yeah,
you know?
No doubt.
And I think that's the thing you're saying about, like, it just becomes this thing where it's a sea change, you know.
It's also this different time. They haven't caught up to the reality of it yet. Like, one of the things about your show is you had a late night show, but late night shows have become, they have this sort of symbiotic relationship with the internet now, because one of the big things is getting a clip that people find about online and they, you know, Facebook it back and forth to each other, and they go, oh, listen to this cool funny thing that Conan did, and then and that becomes a great way to get people aware of the show.
Yes.
So it's almost like the time that it's on is not nearly as important as the fact that it's being made.
Yes, and what I ran into on my shows, because I didn't grow up wanting to, because I've read both the late night books that Bill Carter wrote. All those dudes grew up wanting to be late night talk show hosts, like Conan and Kimmel, and they all came. Letterman was their hero, and Carson was their hero. I didn't grow up that way. I grew up, Chris Rock was my hero. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be a stand-up. And he had a show on HBO that I was like, I want, but it wasn't, nobody thought of it as a late night show. It was the Chris Rock show.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And Stewart. I like Stewart. Like, it's the Jon Stewart show. It's not a late night talk show. But once I got put in that world, suddenly there was this thing about, like, do you have any famous friends we could put on here who could come on here? Like, the way that Fallon does a thing with Justin Timberlake. And it's like, Fallon was on SNL for 8 years. Like, you know, his Rolodex is filled with everybody. I was in the Bay Area. You know, I don't have the ability to reach out to those
You're
people.
You're hanging out near a meth sign.
Exactly. I was out going, man, I'm not going to do crystal meth anymore. I'll call the guy from the poster. I'll call the Asian twink from the poster to come on the show. But yeah,
you
got to
be careful.
That.
You can't say twink. And you know, Andy Cohen got in trouble for saying twink.
Oh, is that? Well, I feel like I'm calling him that because that's the, they were portraying him as that way. I'm not saying that Asians are twinks.
The term, twink, you're not allowed to use it anymore.
Well, okay, I'll pull
They've
back
They've decided.
On that
you gotta pull
is
back
okay
on
now
twink.
For me not to say that one?
The guy, the head of Bravo, who's a gay guy.
Oh, yeah, no,
He got in trouble for saying someone's a perfect twink. It's preposterous.
Well, it's everybody seeing everybody's shit. Well, it used to be that you only saw your shit and the shit you were interested in. So,
yes.
And when you're the head of a network, it's a totally different deal. You know what I mean? It's not like I said it, and somebody may tweet at me and tell me I don't have to say it, and I'm like, oh, but I'm not responsible for billions of dollars.
If someone does tweet you and tells you, retweet the shit out of that.
What do you mean? To let people know?
Let everybody know. Look at this. Talk to this guy.
Yeah, I mean,
let people react.
I've had people, the thing I like to do, not that. When people say shitty things to me that I think are actually just shitty and not helpful, I've turned a few people. I've made people apologize. Just out of like sheer like Aikido, sort of like taking their energy and putting it in the wall, and then bringing them back. Do you want to do it again? And then we just put it back in the wall, and then they go, yeah, you're right. You're a pretty good guy. I was probably out of line. Like, that's my favorite thing to do, is to turn people on Twitter.
Don't you think that a lot of people are doing it just to get your attention, though?
They absolutely are. But that's why I think it's fun if you can actually make them feel bad for getting your attention. But not from like calling them, not from yelling at them, but from taking like their energy and sort of like, actually, sometimes people will say obnoxious shit and you actually treat it like it's serious and go, well, that's, you know, and they go, no, I'm just, you're just, no, I'm trying to listen to what you're saying. Like, they get frustrated because you're not mad.
Right.
And I like to, not that I do, it's like when I'm on the road and I'm by myself, it's like, all right, let's, it's not, I'm not yelling at them. mm-hmm. I'm fucking with them back in a way that they don't realize that you should be mad.
No. Well, now they know.
Yeah, now
they
know
your strategy.
Well,
yeah, and they're going to come up with some fucking new angles of attack.
We'll see what happens. I'm ready for it, or I'll just ignore it. I'll just ignore it. Yeah,
yeah. Some new matador tactics you're going to have to come up with. Yeah, dealing with people online is amazing. It's an amazing thing that no one was prepared for. Interacting with people on message boards, on Twitter, on Facebook, on all these different...
If we had this at the beginning of the United States of America, we wouldn't be in the future right now. We'd still be in, like, wagons and buggies. Like, I just feel like it is slowing down progress by the time that we're all spending arguing about bullshit online.
Don't you think, though, that... Look, I don't agree with a lot of the social justice warriors and their tactics and the professional victim mentality that a lot of them portray, but in
I feel like that's two different groups of people. I feel like social justice people and professional victims, I just think that's... Isn't that two different groups of people?
It can be.
Okay,
the
all right.
The point is, like, really whiny, overly sensitive, super progressive, aggressive people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that it opens up the dialogue and forces people to even if you're communicating about it in a way where you're defending your position, mm-hmm. that conversation gets, like, subject is this subject that's coming up a lot lately, where a lot of feminists are trying to push the idea that if a person has sex with someone that's been drinking, that it's rape. They're saying
always?
That you can't. Yes, they're saying you can't consent, including men. They're saying a woman having sex with a drunk man, she's raping that man because he's not able to consent because he's drinking. I think it's ridiculous. I think there's...
Some of us wouldn't be here without some fucking sex.
Not only that, there's a giant spectrum of what intoxication is. Yes. Also, it takes away a lot of responsibility where you are forced to be responsible for your actions if you're driving. Mm-hmm. You're forced to be responsible for your actions if you engage in a violent activity. Mm-hmm. But somehow or another, if you're drinking and someone has sex with you, you were raped. The same amount of intoxication that you would be liable for driving, liable for violent actions, now you're not liable for your actions. Mm-hmm. It seems ridiculous. And it also, it discredits women in a lot of ways because you're saying that they're not capable of forming their own decisions mm-hmm. and deciding that they want to have a couple of drinks and fuck some guy. Because, you know, women do that.
And sometimes you need a couple of drinks before you fuck some guy, just because otherwise you're not going to want to fuck that guy.
Exactly. And it's fun.
And it's Friday evening and you had a hard week. And
exactly.
He's not the good-looking guy you thought you'd meet at the bar. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're having a good time. I mean, it's not always a negative thing. And that's the problem with broad strokes, like painting with broad strokes. But in introducing this dialogue and discussion mm-hmm. and making people angry about this debate, they are bringing up the very real situation of people drugging people and getting people drunk and having sex with them, which is disgusting.
Yes.
And is rape and is immoral.
Yes.
So I think even in, like, when they push the needle way too far to the left,
point, though, I think
it balances out a little bit.
That's the point, is that sometimes you can't. It's like the thing where if you go, hey, can we talk about rape? Nah. Can we just for a second talk about it? Nah, I don't want to talk. We need to talk about rape!
Yes.
Okay.
Like, it's not that big of a deal.
But you have to, you can't, and I think this is certainly the culture of oppressed people is that the culture of oppressed being oppressed in America is that people don't hear you when you ask permission for things.
Right.
That people don't hear you when you say, I'd like to talk about racism in America and just see if we can finally. Nobody wants to hear that. So you have to. I love when there's people sometimes so far, because the right is filled with people who are so far on the right and don't, and are always like barking and people mm-hmm. and get a lot of attention. The left has historically been ashamed of that. Like, we don't want to get too loud and we.
Right.
And so for me, it's like, we need a couple of those people who show us where the middle should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are like, so far, okay, well, we don't want to do that.
Right,
but
right.
But like you said, the pendulum has to be pushed that far to get it back to the middle.
Yeah, no doubt. And I don't know if it has to be, but it aids in that movement.
This is a little example of it. Like, people will say that Occupy Wall Street didn't accomplish anything. However, we didn't talk about the words income inequality ever in this country until Occupy Wall Street.
Well, it introduced the phrase 1%.
People say it didn't accomplish anything. It accomplished, but by going to the parks and sitting out and getting your bongos out and, you know, and knitting for justice or whatever and feeding people and giving out books. Now that is in the, people on the right will say income inequality in the 1%, not realizing that they've adopted the speech of the left, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's mean sometimes you have to have a tantrum to get some attention. And I think coming from historically black people, we are used to like, okay, we need to have a tantrum. Sometimes that tantrum is inventing rock and roll. And sometimes it's a Million Man March, you know? It's just that's the nature of getting attention in America as an oppressed group.
Well, it's also the first time ever where people can uniquely start a movement online. Mm-hmm. They don't need like an office somewhere where they hire a bunch of people. Or
they don't need to know anybody. They don't need to see anybody personally who is helping them make the movement happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is happening all the time. This climate march on New York City. They fucking clogged up the streets, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And on the climate, nobody is. That's not a sexy issue. Nobody's like, you know, that's not. But they got the word out and made people think it's important, which I believe it is. But it's also a thing where it's like, as a person who's like, I have other issues that I'd like to see the streets clogged up with, you know.
Yes.
But okay, that's, I'm glad we're getting the streets clogged.
Yeah, well, it's a fascinating time when you see these movements and you see how big they are, and right now nonviolent and peaceful, but the government, be sure, is aware that this could also be a large protest that turns violent, like an overthrow the government type protest. I mean, look, this guy that just fucking broke into the White House the other day, the guy who hopped the fence,
oh man,
had like 900 rounds of ammo in his car and duct tape and fucking...
And just climbed the fence and ran. I mean, I hate when it's like, it wasn't even like an Ocean's 11 plan. Yeah. I'm just going to climb the fence and run and get to the door.
And he got all the way to the fucking door.
How many... It's so hard to feel like, how many... What is happening? There's multiple levels of security at the mm-hmm. White House. It's not just one guy who's like, I didn't see him. It's not the fucking. It's not the greeter at Walmart. Like you know, how many levels of security have to break down for him to get into the White House? And why is that happening?
They suck.
Exactly. Yeah. And why do they suck now? Is my question in the era of the black president? Why does this have to be when they suck?
Oh, they sucked in the era of the Bush presidency.
But I just feel.
Did the same thing happen? A guy broke into the White House and got on the White House lawn when Bush was president
Someone
as well.
Flew a plane into the White House, right?
No, that was the Pentagon.
What are you talking about? When?
Like a small plane, like a
long time
plane.
Ago though, wasn't it? When was that?
Well,
Google that shit. I don't know.
Yeah. But a plane is
Google
different than
that
climbing
shit.
The fence and running and getting in the front door. To me, the problem with that is like there's no sophistication to that. That should mm-hmm. be the easiest thing. Unleash the hounds. All right, we're done with that.
Yeah, well, they'd have to be on point 24/7 looking out for any... There was another woman that...
But
didn't,
aren't
didn't
they supposed
a woman
to?
Pull up?
Aren't they supposed to? Yeah.
Did a woman get shot recently?
Oh, really?
Same thing?
Yeah.
Didn't a woman get shot? She showed up at the White House in her car and broke through a barrier and...
Say they have to be on point 24 hours. I think they're supposed to be. I think that's the gig.
But the point is that these movements that you see like in New York City where they're clogging the streets, that could easily happen at the White House. And that's fucking terrifying for them. If a million people just stormed the White House and tore it to the ground, you know, stomped to death all the fucking Secret Service agents were holding their heads up for the camera. Like, that shit is not outside the realm of possibility if everything goes horribly wrong.
Well, no, not with, I mean, you know, ISIS is doing a good job of recruiting people right now with some Hollywood-style videos, and, you know, if somebody in America picked up that ball, you know, I think that's what the White House is afraid of right now, is that clearly ISIS, or ISIL, whatever you call it, is recruiting from here.
Yeah.
It's not a Middle East. It's not just a
not
Middle East
problem.
Not very many. But at least it's like, it's stirring the pot here in a way. Nobody thought Al-Qaeda was recruiting from, it was like, going to get American people to do it. Every now and again there was one, but this is like actually, there's a sense that they are recruiting. That like there was that in that video that they released, there's the one shot of a cell phone video of somebody driving past the White House and shooting video of the White House, mm-hmm. which everybody can do.
Right.
But the fact it was in the ISIS video is like, oh shit, it implies something. You know?
Yeah.
That is not, but I think we could do that, but until the only way that happens in America is you have to make it seem legitimate and you have to make it sexy. Occupy Wall Street became sexy for a few months.
We need like an ice bucket challenge to take over the government.
Yeah, we need an ice bucket challenge. I am going to scale the White House and I challenge.
94, man killed in suicidal plane crash in the White House. So that was Clinton.
Yeah.
Wow.
Skidded across the South Lawn.
Crazy fuck.
Yeah.
Goofy bastard. Look at him, his porn mustache.
Yeah, a plane is different, though, because you can't see. It's like, oh, there's a plane coming. It's coming at us. But a dude who's, like, climbing the fence, that just seems so, like, last minute and not...
Low-tech.
Yeah, that's not well thought out. That should not be a thing that he got to the White House door. It should have been, I'm over the fence. Oh, my God, the dogs are eating me. Oh, well, this didn't go well.
I mean,
it reminds me of that scene in Casino when they talk about Ocean's 11, the most successful bank robbery, or Vegas... heist robberies, and it's only people who got to the door.
Right.
Like, you know, like that's what should happen. It shouldn't be a thing where you get inside. And
well, there's more money in Vegas than there is in guarding the White House.
Yeah, certainly. The mob, despite its quiet except, still runs Vegas. The mob is not running the White House anymore.
If they were, it would be a tighter ship.
Yes. I'm all for that.
We and more consequences.
School. Yes, yeah, yeah.
They wouldn't kill the guy on the spot. They'd drag him into the house first.
Yeah, they talk to him. They have a conversation with him first. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't think in our lifetime we're going to... I don't know if we're going to ever see like some sort of a crazy million group of people that are storming the government like we saw in Egypt, like we saw in Libya. I don't know.
I think we would have to really get to a strange place to make that happen. To get that many people on the same page who also have that kind of... Because even the Tea Party and the further right versions of that aren't doing that. They have all the guns, but they're not prepared to do that with them.
And also, there's no... I mean, besides September 11th, there's no notable attacks on America in America. There's Pearl Harbor, which is sort of America.
Yeah, sort of America, yeah.
Flying 5 hours in a plane over the ocean doesn't really seem like America to me. Although I love Hawaii. But the difference between that and September 11th, like September 11th, like, okay, this actually is happening in America.
Attack, yeah.
If more things happen in America and we think it's a direct result of mismanagement, misgovernment, you know, corruption, what have you, and people die and, you know, Chicago's blown off the face of the map, some ugly shit could go down.
Yeah, but you're talking about like a post-apocalyptic, like a Blade Runner type of, like, that's not something that we're several steps away from that.
But that's one of the reasons why people will never give up their fucking guns. It's one of the reasons why people think like this shit could always happen. I want to be locked and loaded with a bunch of water in my basement, some potatoes on standby,
some potatoes,
bags of standby, rice, and potatoes
with the thing where I can clean my urine so I can drink it.
Super Brita filter.
When is that? I mean, I'm not trying to take away people's guns away, but when has a cache of guns stopped the government from taking anybody down if they wanted to take them down?
Depends on how many guns and how many people.
But I'm saying we haven't seen it happen. You know, when they decide to come get you, you know, Ruby Ridge or Waco, they go get the tank with the fire. That'll stop the semi-automatic machine guns.
Well, he wasn't trying to take down the government. He was trying to bang everybody's kids.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. He wasn't even doing things that were necessarily, he wasn't killing people in there. They were just like, get the tank with the fire. That'll settle this. That'll take care of this. You know?
Well, you can't fence in your town and then like have tanks and guns and ammo and... The government's like, that seems a little too much like a small country, you fuck.
we're not a fan. And I'm not for the government ruling everything. I just think that the thing that you see in Egypt and in the Ukraine is that if people storm the streets, it doesn't matter how many tanks you have. That if people just go, and I always say that like the problem with American protests is they have an end time and it's posted on Facebook. We're going to be in the streets until 5:30, you know.
Right.
Whereas in the Ukraine and Egypt, they're like, no, we're just going to stay. Yeah. We're just not going anywhere. And I know that Americans have that, I mean, have that kind of follow through. Eventually you're like, I'd like to get home and watch some Netflix.
Yeah, Walking Dead is on tonight, and I'm going to order takeout.
I got to pick up my kid from soccer practice.
We're soft as fucking baby shit, man.
Well, that's isn't that the goal of being an American?
Yes.
Being allowed to be as soft as baby shit? Isn't that why people struggle to get here, why kids are streaming across the border? Because it's hard living here.
Well, let's that's also why we got to fight terrorism over there it doesn't come over here. So you can avoid your Chinese food. You can enjoy your soccer practice.
That's
why we need guns.
That's why we need guns.
You got to understand the Second Amendment, son.
Second Amendment,
I'll show it to you. It's written on animal skins.
That God wrote the Second Amendment. I don't think that's how that worked.
The shit was written in the 1700s, and everybody's clinging to it. That's the hilarious thing about the Constitution in general, that is written like, this is unconstitutional. Yes, but the fucking Constitution is old as shit.
Well, as I understand it, as I was taught in high school American history class, when they wrote it, they were like, this will just set the country up for about 20 years, and then we'll come back and look at this.
Right.
Like, this is just we're done with the British, we got to make sure they don't come back, so we need militias just in case they show up again, but this is just to get us started.
Right.
And it became sacrosanct. It became like, it became another chapter of the Bible.
Well, once the people who wrote it are dead, you don't ever want to fuck with it, because then it's like a religious doctrine.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is that religious doctrines aren't religious doctrines.
Yeah.
Like they're all written by a dude named Jeff. You know what I mean? Like
someone,
somebody
Paul.
Who's like, somebody's like, I just want to, You know, it's like Chris Rock, great Chris Rock bit about it. Like people said God said it, because if you say I said it, people don't listen.
Yeah.
So, pork will kill you. They don't listen. God said pork will kill you. Okay, we'll stop eating pork. You know, people like to be told. They like authority. And I'm not, and I say this as somebody who's not, I'm not an atheist. I'm not anti-religion. I certainly think religion's done a lot of shitty things, but I'm not sitting here as an atheist going, I don't, you know, believe in any of it.
What are you if you're not an atheist? Do you consider yourself an agnostic? Are you religious?
No, I'm not really. I mean, I grew up
Christian.
I feel like I come from a Christian base. Like I was Black church, Methodist church, Baptist church. So I can't help but retreat to that sometimes when the shit hits the fan. Like, you know, oh Jesus help. Like, but I don't expect him to walk through the door. You know what I mean? Like, I don't believe that there is a guy in heaven looking down on me, but I do like to think of the universe as being in a place where if you live a good life and have order, that things will work out for you. And certainly I will retreat to, you know, I like to think that it makes me feel comforted to go, thanks God, you know, but I'm not going, before we get started, let's have a prayer. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's culturally, God has been cultured. I've been in, like, cultured with God, and it doesn't, and it seems to have worked out, but I don't want to go to church.
Have a mild form of Christianity.
I have a mild form. it's like herpes
that you don't need to take Valtrex for.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
It's just fine.
It doesn't usually hurt anybody. I let everybody know. It's just, and I only say that because I feel like I can have the atheism discussion and not feel threatened by, don't tell me there's not a God because it breaks my whole. No, it's
right.
This is my own. In the same way that some people, their God is, Game of Thrones. They like think that's the thing. You know, that's all of us have gods that we've defined as like, I'm living my life. Comic-Con is religion for people. But we somehow, if you actually say that.
Really? Dude, don't you just think it's a gathering, a fun gathering? Like,
but that's what religion started out as. It was a way to centralize the community and get people on the same page about stuff. And some of those things are moral. And I get, you've been to Comic-Con? You must have.
I've been outside of Comic-Con. I've never gone into Comic-Con.
If you went into Comic-Con, you wouldn't ask this question. I went there. I went in there. It's for real. Like, people, this is like people's lives.
Well, isn't it because they get the freedom to have fun and be a freak? Because, like, most of the time, society frowns upon you dressing like an anime character. Most of the time, you can't be a furry. You can't be Iron Man. You can't just be there and be hanging out with people having a good time.
Well, I think it is that, but it's also those people, they go there because that's the place where they're permitted to have it, but they're living it the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're just dressed like a furry in their house. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But then that's the year they go, it's like, you know, it's like Christmas. We're allowed to hang the lights and do all the shit that, and it's just fun. But then some people also carry it, have a cross on their wall. You know, I don't think there's much difference ultimately between a Spider-Man poster on your wall than a cross on your wall if that's the thing that you're focused on, you know?
That's hilarious. Spider-Man is your God.
Yes. There's certainly, and I live in San Francisco where people are hyper-focused about their version of their life. Like, I want to live my life this way, I want to go to this coffee shop, and I go to this bar, and I do leather things on the weekend, and I go to the Folsom Street Fair, and that, to me, it's like, that's your religion. That's the thing that makes you feel better about the world, and that's how you put order on the world. But you're not, and your God may be... That I'm going to live the best gay lifestyle I have, or that I'm going to be the best, you know, whatever. We all have gods. We just don't want to put that word on them. So for me, my God is actually, I put the word God on there because I don't want to be a hypocrite and be like, I'm like, basically when I met my wife, she was in religious studies major, or she was in graduate school for that. And I was like, I did the thing that everybody says, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. She's like, that's full of shit. You know, like, what do you believe? And I was like, I guess I believe in God. But it's like, if you say that, people start to get quiet. Like, you guys are getting quiet right now.
I'm letting you talk.
No, I know. I'm just fucking around. But yeah.
I just don't see the connection between Spider-Man and God. I think Spider-Man is something you enjoy. God is something you believe in that doesn't necessarily have any basis in fact or in provable. You can't prove the existence of God. You can't.
True.
It's nothing. There's nothing that you can point to in science that says, well, we can't explain this. We're pretty sure that what this is God's work.
But I feel very comfortable in not, because I'm not trying to convince you guys.
Uh-huh.
I feel very comfortable in not being able to approve the thing that is, that I sort of walk around with.
But listen, you don't have to. I mean, it's a framework for, you know, moral judgments. It's a framework for discipline. It can give you sort of a path to lead your life in a positive manner. There's nothing wrong with religion,
no.
But it's not Iron Man.
But But I think I believe that we all, that there are things that we put in our, and I'm not, this isn't even criticism. Mm-hmm. It's just, there are things that people put in their life. Like, I don't believe in God. And then you see that they spend whatever you're spending the most time doing that you feel like is making you a better person. That's your God. That's your religion. We are inventing our own religion right now.
Well, religion, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Ideologies, religions, they're very similar.
I'm sure. Like, I feel like your religion is you got a little MMA religion happening. You know, like, where it's like, I go to the gym, I work out, I'm bonding. This is my community. I bond with these people. I feel better because I come here. There's a code of honor here and a code of ethics that if somebody violates, we talk to that person about it. Or mm-hmm. that's the, and I'm not trying to make anybody feel, this is just my belief.
Right.
I'm not trying to say, it's just you have that life. This is how I live my life and this is how I want to live my life. It's just, we've taken the God thing out of it because people fucked God. People treated that, have turned that into a bad thing, have turned it into a shitty thing. You know, I will make fun of born again Christians all day long. I'm not trying to say that that's the way to do it. But for me, I think because I grew up that way, there was a lot of church around my life. Mm-hmm. I rejected the church, but I also like to, if I'm running for the bus and I get it, sometimes I go, oh, thank God. You know what I mean? I know that I'm, but I don't expect God to be like, I got you, dog. I don't expect to see the guy. You know?
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's in me. It's part of my ethnicity. Black religion.
It could be empowering, you know, to have a belief. And that belief doesn't necessarily have to be even based on fact in order for it to benefit you.
No. The problem is that if you go, this is what I believe, and I'm going to sit here until you two guys believe it.
Well, not only that, like, guess what? I can't disprove it either. The reality is, I've seen way more fucked up shit doing psychedelic drugs than anybody has ever described in the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to heaven and it's just a guy with a harp and angels, and St. Peter's really at the pearly gates and the floor's made out of clouds, like, that would be so normal in comparison to, like, a DMT trip. Like, that shit would be, like, pretty mundane.
And I feel like people talk about proof all the time. I don't know why this phone fucking works.
Well, they could figure that out.
They could figure it out, but you just need to talk
to someone educated.
But nobody's going to explain it to me in a way that I could take it apart and put it back together.
You know what I'm saying? They could. It would just take a long time.
That's what I'm saying. But I don't care. I don't need to know. Do you understand what I'm saying? I trust that there's children in China who know what they're doing, and they put the phone together.
Right, but if you wanted to chase that down to the very origins of the first seed that makes the first phone, you could do that.
And the same way, I don't have interest in doing that. I don't have interest in convincing anybody else about my version of God. Like, as I say on stage, when I say God, I picture a really old Denzel Washington with dreadlocks. that's how it is in my head. That's how I feel about it.
What about... Didn't Morgan Freeman play God in the movie?
Yeah, and George Burns.
There's been a few old dudes.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, mine is specifically Denzel Washington. That's
specifically?
Specifically. Yeah.
Why Denzel?
He's like sort of, me and a friend of mine talked, he's kind of like a surrogate dad, like Denzel Washington. I don't know him, but in the movies, there was a period of my life where, like, I felt like Denzel was helping me figure out. He's the last black actor in Hollywood who is sort of carrying the baton for this is how to be a black man. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And that's an important thing to have in the black community, especially when you grow up. Like, I know who my dad is. I've met him several times. No, I'm fucking around. I know him. I used to visit him in the summer. But I didn't grow up with my dad in the house, and so I found surrogate dads in places in entertainment who I felt like, this is a person I should try to be like.
Right.
Bruce Lee was a surrogate dad of mine, you know, like that just showed me that, again, helping me learn a moral code mm-hmm. and giving me an example of how to be an adult and how to be a man. You know?
Yeah, I had the same. I had a martial arts instructor that did that for me.
I had a martial arts instructor who did it for me.
There's a thing about movies and, like, having someone who maybe even is an unrealistic depiction of a human being, like, so moral and ethical and powerful and strong, but that can be empowering if you want to be like Denzel Washington. You want to get some more coffee? We'll make some more coffee. Throw some more on.
I'm sorry, I mean,
slap on a double screen. Let's do this
shit. Special magic coffee got me rolling,
shit, dude. It's good shit. I never thought too much about racism in movies or thought about black people being represented in movies until I went to see Planet of the Apes in a black neighborhood in Philly.
The
James Franco Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And I was with my friend Tommy and his girlfriend Kate, and we were in Philly for the UFC. And Friday night's the weigh-ins, so we do the weigh-ins on Friday, and then we had Friday night off. And so what do you want to do? Hey, Planet of the Apes is out. Let's go check it out. So we're in the hotel room. We got high as Jesus on the space shuttle. I mean, we went way too deep. We went way too deep. And then we went out to this movie theater. And the closest movie theater was in this all-black neighborhood in Philly. Yeah. And so, I mean, all black. I mean, we were the only white people.
One of America's last few all-black neighborhoods,
But fun.
Yeah.
God damn, it was fun. But here's the thing, man. When I was in that movie theater, I was acutely aware, first of all, that we were the only white people in there. And I was also acutely aware that every fucking ad for every preview, every movie, was white people.
Yeah.
It was all white people. And I was like, whoa. But being in that position, like having that perspective of being a white person in an all black movie theater, I was like, whoa. And being high as fuck made me super sensitive to it. And there was only one white guy that interacted with a black guy in all the previews, and it was Jonah Hill in some fucking goofy ass movie about playing a babysitter where he brings the kids and talks to this black doorman, and he's talking to him in this like really fucking depressing slang.
The black scent is
It was so bad. And then the black guy says to him, like, you a bad motherfucker. I'm like, what? What world is this taking place in? It was so bizarre. Then Planet of the Apes plays, and everyone in the movie is white except the bad guy, who's a black guy, who fucking forces the drugs to get into the monkeys, and then the monkeys go loose and take over the world. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is real shit.
Yeah. Everybody should get that high. Every white person should get that high and go see and go live in the world. Because that's what it is. Everything you said is like, I'm like, uh-huh, yes. Nothing, not surprised.
Well, also that scenario, that particular scenario was unique. It was very unique. Because it was like the perfect storm of shitty preview after shitty preview, and all of them with white people.
Yes.
You know, Cameron, what's her name? Cameron
Diaz.
Diaz, yeah. Cameron Diaz, and oh my God, what are we going to do?
How am I going to find a man?
The black people in the audience just stone faced watching these previews, waiting. No one's laughing, as they shouldn't. There's the most depressing thing ever is when you go to the movies and the previews look like dog shit, and someone's laughing out.
We got to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
To see how Melissa McCarthy falls down.
Yeah.
Oh, she's hilarious. She's big. She's a big girl.
My favorite is when
so
people
funny
when it's a stone face like that, and then slowly people laugh at it. Like there's slowly the audience starts to they're not laughing with it. They're laughing at, that happens in San Francisco sometimes. People are like they're actually like, no, we're laughing at you, movie.
Yes.
We're not laughing. We're not going to go see you. This is ridiculous bullshit you've put it before us.
That is beautiful. That's when you know you're in a good neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a
yeah.
good neighborhood to be in. That's
ironic laughter at the trailers that's the crowds I want to perform in. The crowds that laugh at the trailers ironically.
That Jonah Hill, see if you could find that fucking preview.
Which one?
Jonah Hill in the babysitter some shit like that.
I remember I remember where I just felt like, why'd you just let me down? It was Steve Martin in the movie with Queen Latifah, and where like some sort of thing where she's the blah 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 and he's the blah blah blah, and together they got the blah. And the trailer is just her being a very outsized version of a black woman and him being a very narrow version of a white guy, and in the middle of it, Steve Martin, one of the greatest comedians of all time, who was in the Comedy Hall of Fame, does a thing where he walks through a black club, all gangstered out in like a jersey, and he's walking like a quote unquote black guy. And I'm like, not you, Steve Martin. You're one of the greatest. You
probably
know
has a mortgage.
Yeah, he's got probably that $50 million house.
Yeah, that's the movie.
Yeah.
See if you can find that video.
Yeah, I got it right now.
You got it? We got to see this video because it's so fucking bad. He's like the wacky, crazy babysitter. And by the way, I'm a Jonah Hill fan. I think fucking... I watched that in an all-black movie theater, stoned to the gills. And I went, whoa, what a cartoonish, buffoonish representation of black people. And this is the only one they get to see.
And the funny thing is people say, why are some black people so angry? And I feel like the people in that theater get angry because we have to let shit wash over us or else we'll be angry all the time. We will be outwardly like flipping tables all the time if we don't sort of go, we just got to wait for Planet of the Apes. We just got to let this wash over us. We can't turn this into a change.org petition. We just got to let this go.
Well, it's also you're never dealing with things from a neutral point because you're dealing with things from the repercussions of all the other shit that you've seen already that.
Yeah, and the thing is, as has been stated by many people, is that in this country, most people watching those trailers that you saw aren't going, these are a bunch of white people in these trailers. They're going, those are a bunch of people in these trailers. But then if you show the trailer for, you know, Friday after next, then it's a bunch of black people in those trailers.
Yeah.
Because white is considered to be normal in this country. That's the, white is the default. It's like on the census, which is, if you pull up the census form, the first category when they, on the race category, the list of races is white. So it's not alphabetical.
Right.
It's just white. Okay, white. And then if you're not that, what else are you? And it's right. Like, it's like white people are busy. We got to, you know. So it's that white is considered the default. And when people say things like I've talked about this before, like, People magazine is about white people for the most part, but Essence says it's a black magazine,
right?
You know, it's very, but white, and I feel like white people, one way to sort of put less racism in the world is white people have to start putting white on their magazines. They have to start, if white people got more comfortable with talking about their whiteness, it would make the rest of us not look crazy when we talked about our ethnicity. But sometimes when I go, as a black man, people go, why do you have to?
But white people can't. If white people talk about their ethnicity, if white people say, we're going to have the White Actors Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
Well, that's a problem.
That shit would not fly.
Because some white people, it wouldn't fly because white, when people, historically in this country, when people identify themselves as white, it's the Klan or it's neo-Nazis.
Right.
And I feel like good white people like yourselves have to take whiteness back.
Thank you for including me in the group of good white people. I appreciate that very much.
No problem.
You know what someone said to me also is that white power, like brown pride is a tattoo that Cain Velasquez has on.
Yeah.
And nobody, yeah. I mean, Cain Velasquez is the heavyweight champion of the world. No one gives him a hard time for having brown pride tattooed on his chest because he's proud to be a Mexican. But if you had white pride tattooed on your chest, that's a different animal. So I said this to my friend and he was like, yeah, but you know what? You could have Irish pride. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, that's so true. Mm-hmm. Like you could have Irish pride tattooed on your chest.
And you know what the difference is?
Irish people have not been known to be like slave masters and not been known to be KKK members. It's not like a traditional background for them.
And I think it's also, it's about there's a nationality there versus white. White was an invented concept in this country. You know what I mean? Like in Europe, they don't think racism exists in Europe because it's all about it's like the French hate the Spanish. And it's not, they don't go the white. So they think we don't have racism. Yeah, but you still have nationalism, weird shit.
Yes.
And over there, like, it's okay to hate Arabs. That's different. But, but in this country, white became this invented concept. And the reason why white power is hard for people to take is because white people already got the power. When Cain Velasquez has a tattoo that says brown pride, it's because brown people don't feel like they've got enough power, and it's a way to invoke a feeling of power and invoke the thing that brown people have been shit on, and I'm going to take the power back. Black power came out of black people going, we're tired of being shit on, so we're going to say black power. White power, you got it, white people.
You don't need a tattoo.
You got it. You redundant fuck. And so when the white people put white power on, it feels like, wait, how much power are you going to take?
You want more power?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, just because then it becomes about, we don't want you in our schools. We don't want black people in our schools or brown people in our schools. Like, geez, we don't want you drinking out of our water fountain. You know what I mean? It becomes this, the power gives so crazy. But I believe, and I got a kid who's half white, that if white people, good white people, actually reclaimed words like white power and white pride for the sake of good things, like, because there's things you can be proud to be white about, and it became something that wasn't about neo-Nazis or swastikas, that it would change the race discussion in this country. That if white people could sit around and go, I'm proud to be white, without us going, uh-oh, something bad's about to happen.
No one would be able to do that, because if you even say that at all,
it's a pendulum shift. I'm trying to push it. I'm trying to swing it.
I don't think that's ever going to fly. I really don't.
I have to yell out here on the edges so that in the middle people can go, okay, we're not going to do that, but let's at least talk about racism. You know what I
think
mean?
You could do it as a sketch and make like a bunch of buffoonish, cartoonish white people who are, golly, we're proud to be white. We love black folks. I love Tyler Perry.
It's not about loving black, it's about loving white things. It's about, like, I love Mumford and Sons.
Right.
You know?
That's like, white as fuck.
Exactly, yeah.
That's too white for me.
Yeah.
That hurts me. That's what they went so white, they went back in time.
Yes.
You notice that?
Yeah.
Mumford and Sons, they're essentially white when slavery was legal. That's what they're doing. They're drinking out of mason jars. They all have fucking chaps
they're
on.
They're plantation white.
Like, what are you guys doing? You're wearing vests? You pretending you're the outlaw Josie Wales? Like, what the fuck are you doing?
And that's, but it's very authentic to a version of whiteness. There's nothing about Mumford and Sons, it feels black.
No, it's very white.
Or it feels like white Americana. And
it's,
that's to me,
not
it's
even
like,
man, it's a new white. It's a new white that's an old white.
That's what I mean. It's a throwback to the, it's like retro to a time when, like, why are we going back to that time?
Yeah, there's no black people in those videos, are there? Is there black people in Mumford & Sons videos?
can you Google that?
Is I would like to
black
know.
People in a Mumford & Sons video?
Could you imagine if they just
can
started...
Can I tweet them and find out, can I be a black guy in your video?
If a bunch of people came to a black movie theater to see a black movie and they just started playing Mumford & Sons videos before the movie started...
People would wipe... Black people just patiently like... All right, let's just we just wait for the movie to start. It just keep it together.
Like think keep of like together. A movie with Denzel Washington and Morgan Freeman and just loaded
Angela
up with
Bassett,
the greatest
produced by Oprah Winfrey, directed
African-American
by
African American stars ever in a fucking giant blockbuster like Quentin Tarantino style movie, just gigantic, huge. Fucking blockbuster movie. But
based on the story of the civil rights leader,
everybody gets excited about it. Places packed with black. They just play Mumford & Sons video after Mumford & Sons video. And they troll these people. Like, they don't get it. They play like a half an hour of Mumford & Sons before the movie
starts. And it just fades to black, and then a new one fades up into a new video. Oh, God.
You should do that. You should do that for a fucking show, man. You should do that for a show. Just troll the people.
Yeah.
My God, that would be incredible.
It's the funny thing it reminds me of is like one time I was watching, I was flipping past the channels and I flipped past like the country music channel and I stopped because it was a video that was playing on the country music channel, except there was black people in it.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, and I was like, whoa, like what's going on here? Like why are there's black people in this country video?
Darius Rucker.
That's exactly it. Ah! And I thought that was so funny. I'm like, oh, since a black guy's singing it, we can throw a black couple in this country music video. It was amazing. I was like, good for you, Darius Rucker. For
he's tapped into it, man.
Yeah, because he tried to release an R&B album, and black people went, nah, Hootie.
Really?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. I mean, I think he's authentic to himself, but after Hootie and the Blowfish, he released an R&B album for black people.
What are you showing us, Jamie?
It's Mumford & Sons.
There's
Love
a black
the
guy.
Light.
Oh,
yeah, look at that!
Wait, Nelson Mandela.
I don't know if this counts. Technically,
that doesn't count at all. Black, this is from the movie Mandela.
Yeah. Black James Bond doesn't count as an average black person.
Yeah, you get that fucking shit off our screen.
Yeah. Although I like, you know, he's a good looking guy.
He's a great actor and all that. But see, how dare you?
How dare you?
Well, how about a big movie that he's playing in? He's playing a fucking guy who's like a serial killer, and he goes after black women. Like he knocks on the door in the middle of the night, tells her that his car broke down.
What an awkward time to release that movie.
Yeah, ridiculous.
That's why I'm not trying to be an actor.
Yeah, he's not a star in a movie where like he gets the girl and
because black guys got it. We always got to go a different way. You know, because if anybody should be playing a black superhero, it should be that dude. But no, how about the serial killer first?
Well, Denzel Washington got to play. He's the closest to that. He got to play like real superstar type roles.
Yes.
That like you would maybe see like someone else, like George Clooney or Brad Pitt.
But even he sort of never. He doesn't do like romantic comedies. He's clearly doing a very specific. He's very hemmed into the thing. I'm sure he's choosing it, but he's not doing like you don't see him in like a full on broad comedy. You don't see him doing like.
Nor do you see George Clooney though.
You don't. But George Clooney always gets the girl.
Right.
And Denzel Washington is in these movies where, like, for example, he was in The Pelican Brief, and it's one of those movies where him and Julia Roberts should end up together banging, and they don't, which is like, and I don't know whose decision that is, but it's like George Clooney, no matter what movie it ends up at the end with him kissing the girl and then the credits rolling.
That's true.
Whereas Denzel, it's like there's always a reason. He's always it doesn't always work out for him. He usually gets killed at the end.
He has discipline and he can keep the pussy away from
him. Yeah.
He's very disciplined, martial artist or something.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a trend going on now though to sort of avoid what he's saying
about Will Smith.
What about him?
He's in a bunch of movies where he gets to do those
roles. Well, that's because he's post Denzel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. He gets to do the things that Denzel either doesn't want to do or can't do or feels like he can't.
He does romantic comedies too, though. He did like Hitch. Mm-hmm.
He gets to do Denzel is the guy who's still holding the Sidney Poitier baton. Mm. Anybody want this? And everybody's like, nah, we're good.
He's 100% serious and legit. Yeah.
Even though he's funny, I mean, he's very funny in movies, but he's not. He just there's clearly a thing that he's walking a path that I don't want to be caught up in a thing where he's still holding the baton of blackness in a way that people after him don't have to hold it.
What I was talking
Denzel's
about,
not going to do a movie where you play the guy who beats up the black women, like he's not going to do that movie unless that dude gets murdered by Oprah.
He did American Gangster.
And yes, and he always that guy ends up at the end. If you notice, whenever he does the movie about the guy who's like a villain, he either gets killed or he ends up at the end broken.
Right.
He never does a thing where that guy goes out on top or like, like Training Day is a great movie until I think I got to die. You know, like he always gets a comeuppance at the end. It's it's a very moral thing he's doing because he wants to show this is not how you live your life.
You think it's a conscious decision on his part and like how he chooses those roles?
He's an A-list, you know, he is the A-list black actor and he's an A-list actor. You know, I mean.
How many A-list black actors are there? Is there like even 10?
No. There's him, there's Will Smith, and then it's a huge drop off.
Idris is trying for him. He's new.
Yeah, he's still working. I mean, he's A-list in the UK, but he's not A-list here. He's on his way.
In the UK,
could be.
He's A-list.
Yeah, he's a British actor.
He's British.
He's a big star over there.
So he speaks with a British accent?
Absolutely.
That's always weird. Like, the guy from The Walking Dead. Have you ever heard the guy from The Walking Dead? The Rick? Oh, you ever heard him talk in real life? He speaks with a total English accent.
Yeah.
Same as the guy from Homeland. The redheaded dude from Homeland, deep English accent.
You know what I think is weird is Christian Bale, who's British, when he was doing interviews for Batman, spoke in an American accent.
Did he?
Yeah, because he wanted people to accept Batman as Batman. He didn't want to throw them off with
a
British accent.
So he threw a fake accent out while he was talking?
When he did interviews for the movie Batman, he did an American accent.
He's Uncle Tommen for America. That's what he's doing.
Seems to have worked out.
Yeah, I guess.
No, you make three of the biggest action movies of all time.
Well, Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
He's kind of done it, too. He abandoned that.
Yeah, he sort of dumped. He brings it down a little bit when he's...
Barely.
Yeah.
Never hear that Australian accent from him.
Yeah.
He's an odd duck. He's got a weird situation going on. He's married to a 100-year-old lady. He's like, what's going on there, dude?
Somebody's got to want to marry a 100-year-old lady.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
you know how marriage works. Everybody's got their their agreements once the door closes,
or
it's all up to whatever the agreement is.
I like
agreements.
What you're saying.
No,
agreements.
I'm absolutely saying.
I know what we're saying.
Yeah,
we could just leave it right here.
Yeah, yeah.
No need to get crazy.
No need to accuse anybody of anything or say that something's happened that we don't know about personally.
What the fuck do we know, man?
Yeah, no,
we
I don't know
shit.
You know, and certainly there's people. Marriage is an agreement.
Handsome man, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful body.
No, I never liked him as Wolverine, but that's my own.
Yeah, well, he's too tall.
He's too tall.
Wolverine's supposed to be built like Hector Lombard. It's supposed to be this.
I feel like it's supposed to be like a young Robert De Niro.
Yeah. but definitely too good looking. But it should be like this wide, thick tank of a man, like a Wolverine.
The Wolverine
animal is a small animal that's crazy, wild, and no one wants to fuck with
and covered in hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not supposed to. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be this beautiful 6'4" handsome man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect abs. The real Wolverine was like 5'6" or something like that. Just this tank of a little short guy with metal bones that killed a lot of people. Was a fucking murderer.
Yeah, that's funny how those claws in the movies don't ever like do the damage that you would think. You got claws coming out of your hands, man. Seems
like
they
don't show it. You know, I mean, if they could do an R-rated version of Wolverine where he's just slicing people up.
I feel like
up.
They're starting to get the idea that they can make comic book movies. Like, they're doing a Deadpool movie. You know who Deadpool is?
Yeah.
Like, they're doing I feel like they're leaning into, like, oh, no, actually adults want to see superhero movies, but with actual adult things happening.
Well, The Watchmen.
Yeah. But even
Watchmen
a more, so more of that. Because I'm at this point, I'm a comic book geek, at least I was, and I like superhero movies, but I'm over them. I just like, it's an explosions, and then you do the CGI, and then you do the thing. Okay,
I'm a comic book geek, too. I definitely was when I was a kid. I was a huge comic book geek.
I skipped all the comic book movies this summer. I was just like,
really?
I just couldn't, the Spider-Man movie with Andrew Garfield, the first one. So the second one came out, I was like, no. And then Captain America, maybe it's not in my DNA to give a shit about a guy named Captain America. It's just too much. Like, come on, everybody. And he doesn't have any cool powers, so I sort of skipped that.
Well, he's kind of got some cool steroid powers.
He's
super steroidy.
He's Brock Lesnar?
Even more so.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a difference between a guy like him and say like a guy like the Hulk.
Yeah,
like I can get behind the Hulk.
I can get behind. That's the same thing.
He's my favorite of all time.
That's me. I was a kid. I remember the Hulk TV show.
Well, the new Hulk. The thing about the Hulk now is they can make it look real.
Yes.
Like the CGI is so good. And what's his name? What the fuck's the new dude's name?
The guy who plays.
He's an actual
Banner.
Really good actor. What the fuck is his name?
I need that pills.
Mark
Ruffalo.
Ruffalo, there he goes. Yeah. Yeah. He's a really good actor. And Ed Norton was good, too.
Yeah, Ed Norton would have been good. I just think the CGI was not up to snuff.
Eric Bana sucked.
That was, again, Bruce Banner's not 6'4", like 220 pounds, looking at people like, don't make me turn into the Hulk. You're already the Hulk,
bitch,
sir.
You're already huge. But Eric Bana was great in Chopper. But I just think that that movie that he was in was not a good Hulk.
And Ang Lee, and I think he's a great director, admitted he didn't know who the Hulk was when he took the movie.
Oh, that's
like
ridiculous.
They basically gave it to him as like, you're a big Hollywood director. Do you want to do this superhero movie? And he said so. He didn't. There was no sense that he actually understood or cared. Really loved the source material. You know?
Yeah, man. Listen. Sacrilege.
I still feel like just let Lou Ferrigno do it every time, but that's me. I'm old school.
Be the Hulk?
Yeah, no, come on, man.
He's too fucking small.
Well, but you saw Lord of the Rings. Fucking Gandalf's not really that tall in real life. They can do stuff,
I guess, but yeah. It just doesn't look like the Hulk.
I would rather a person was doing it.
Really?
Because I just think it would be better because it's a person. It's not CGI.
I don't mind the Hulk being CGI. Because there's no real Hulk. Like, where CGI looks weird is when it's a CGI version of a real thing. Like, especially animals. They're not good at that yet. Like, fur.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even in the Game of Thrones, like, you see the dogs, the wolves, the dire wolves. You're like, that's not really there. I can kind of pretend it's there.
That's not really touching the ground.
Yeah, there's something going on here. Yeah. Like, it's not... It just... The worst version was the lions in I Am Legend. Remember shit?
Yeah,
they were
so
goofy. Yeah, like, oh, Christ.
Yeah. The other one, I think it was like when the Titanic came out, and there's a shot where they sweep over the ship.
Yes,
and
the people are walking. The robot people.
They don't have any knees. What happened to their knees?
Well, it's like the opening scene in a video game. Like, when you're getting, like...
Yeah, the load screen.
Like
the
arcade.
The cinematic.
Yes.
Yeah, the cinematic where it's like,
exactly.
Well, this isn't the game, but this makes you think the game is going to be cool.
Yeah.
No, that's I'm not... Yeah, I skipped out on superhero movies.
Yeah, they're just not quite there yet with CGI. We were talking about this the other day with monster movies, that, like, they show too much. Like, the American Werewolf in London is the perfect example. You only see that werewolf, like, brief seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so your imagination has to kind of do a lot of work, and it's still scary.
Yeah.
But now when you see a monster movie, you see, like, minutes and minutes of that monster.
The monster. And it starts to look like a dude in a suit or a CGI thing.
It looks like a CGI thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like the I Am Legend monsters, they looked CGI'd up. They didn't look like the 28 Days Later zombies who were people. They moved like a real thing that was really in front of you, as opposed to these things that are moving like somebody created it on a computer.
Somebody's drawing this right now.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, cinematic shit, Hollywood shit.
Yeah.
What do you think about, like, Tyler Perry movies? What do you think about, like, buffoonish versions of black people as done by black people?
I have talked about Tyler Perry in the past. My problem with Tyler Perry movies is that there's not enough black filmmakers out there making movies to not make him look like that's the definitive story of black people.
Right.
And so it's frustrating when people go, that's it, right there. That's the version of it. And you go, if there was other filmmakers, if Spike Lee was still he's a viable filmmaker, but if there was, like, there was a point in the 90s where black people started directing movies, and you thought, oh, we're going to have a lot of major black movie directors.
John Singleton,
Matty Rich, Spike Lee predates those people. But it didn't, there's still, black cinema is still defined by Tyler Perry. And Spike Lee sort of got out of every now and again does one of his classic Spike Lee movies, but it's, my problem is that there's not enough choices. So that I have to have the Tyler Perry discussion, because, like, nobody ever goes to you, like, you know, for nobody's going to sit you down and go, what do you think about Woody Allen movie? You know what I mean? Like, there's not, unless
they
we're
do,
talking
though.
About Woody Allen, but they're not, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not going to pick
saying.
Some, like, you're not going to have to reckon with each and every Hollywood director as it reflects on
you. I don't have
to
represent it as a white person.
You don't have to respond
to Woody Allen movie.
You know what? You can go, like, for example, I can't go, I don't have an opinion on Tyler Perry movies. You'd be like, come on, man.
Right. But
you can go, I don't have an opinion on Woody Allen. You'd be like, I guess he doesn't. He just maybe doesn't think about it. You know,
yeah.
But I have to, as a black person, reckon with Tyler Perry. I'm glad he's employing people. He certainly employs more black actresses than anybody else. And if you're a black actress in Hollywood and your version is getting beat by Idris Elba in a movie, or the Christian mom who finally meets a man and has a girls club or whatever the shit is that he's doing, I've not seen any of them. But I get you go, I think I'll do the thing where I play the woman who's a single mom living in the hood trying to get a better opportunity versus Idris Elba going upside your head for 90 minutes. So I appreciate that. I used to be very, like, like fuck Tyler Perry about it, but I just sort of, things are complicated, man. You know.
Well, he has a weird scenario too, where he does things like old school studio style.
Yeah, he owns. That's the other thing. There's a part of that where the business side is like he owns his own studio, so
yeah.
He literally is making the movies he wants to make. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's major Hollywood directors who aren't doing that.
He
you know?
Writes them.
He writes them. He produces them. He shoots them on his lot. He casts them. He puts himself in them. My thing now, it's just that thing where, like, Ben Affleck's got a new movie coming out, and Tyler Perry's just in it. Like playing a guy.
Really?
Yeah. And yeah. It's, yeah. Is it, what is it?
Well, he does that sometimes. Didn't he play, there was a movie where Matthew Fox,
yeah,
the guy
like
from
he,
Lost.
He tried to play, he tried to do Alex Cross, an Alex Cross movie. And everybody's like, no.
What's Alex Cross? Is
that's
he?
It's a series of movies Morgan Freeman did. It was like Kiss the Girl and.
Really?
Yeah, there's like a series, it's one of those, it's based on a series of novels.
Oh.
And the Morgan Freeman played the character Alex Cross, and then he basically redid it and updated it, and he was playing the main character. And so I think it's called Alex Cross.
Oh, yeah,
but
I didn't
Matt,
know
Matthew
that it was.
Fox was in it, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know it was based on something.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do, an established property that has been a hit movie. We're going to redo it with Tyler Perry and bring his audience in and have a new franchise, but nobody bought Tyler Perry as a serious, dramatic, sort of thriller guy.
Huh.
I mean, it would have been better if it was Madea as Alex Cross.
What are you showing me here?
Gone Girl is the new
Gone Girl. Yeah, and Tyler Perry's just in it.
What is it? What is Gone Girl?
New Affleck movie.
It's going to be the new movie we are all talking about, you know, whether you see it or not, it's going to be.
What is it about?
I don't know.
Oh.
Don't know yet. Oh,
okay.
Something about it.
It's a kid. I think somebody's dog gets kidnapped or something. Yeah. But Tyler Perry's just in it. I feel like it's a little bit hard for me to.
How the fuck does he have time to do all that shit?
He's got that, you know, he's, I think, you know, in this, you can't be that guy without being, and I say this in the best way possible, a hustler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have gotten to the point that he's at without sort of like making time to do as many things as you can do. Because at some point he was living out of his car and doing plays in Baptist churches or something. And so the things he did in movies started out as plays that he did in like community centers and probably church basements, and then he built them up to a thing that you'd go to the Apollo and see a Tyler Perry play, like black theater, because it's like urban black theater.
Does he have a 100-year-old wife too, if you know what I'm saying?
He's got agreements, I'm sure. He's got agreements.
Arrangements.
Yeah. He's not married. He doesn't have any children.
Okay.
Cool.
He
takes his mom to the movie openings.
This is a homophobic conversation without even saying anything.
I don't think it's homophobic.
I feel like I'm being homophobic.
I'm just telling you about the dude. He takes his mom to the premieres.
Nothing wrong with that.
Whatever he is, he's successful at it.
Good
so.
For him. Seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, there's been no scandal, so we can't be mad at him
seems
for anything.
Seems friendly.
Yeah, seems friendly. You know,
doesn't get aggressive and angry at people for no reason.
Like the other blacks? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the good ones. He's not like the others.
Jamie and I being one of the good white people, we like to point out some of the good black people.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. He's also very articulate. I don't know if you noticed that. He speaks so well.
I don't notice color. I don't see it.
Oh, thanks. That's
I'm
so
one
helpful.
Of those people.
Thanks. That's very helpful.
I don't
to,
see color.
Mm-hmm. It's helpful to living in America, a white person who doesn't see color.
I just see people.
I don't see it. I just benefit from it.
I don't
it.
See sex. I don't see.
I don't see gender. I don't
notice white privilege because I don't even notice that I'm white.
It's awesome. Just like I don't notice that I'm 6'4" all the time.
It just seems to be where everything is.
I can reach everything. I don't ever have to get a step stool. I can always see over people at the concerts. It's great.
I got a long reach if you want a box.
Yeah, I got height privilege, but I don't notice it.
Height privilege.
The difference is I used to be short, so I know where I know how short people feel.
Yeah,
but you didn't you weren't black and then grew up into whiteness.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Yeah, but no, I was short until I was, I mean, whatever the definition of short is till high school.
You started getting tweeted when I was involved in this conversation with a lot of people about racism and John Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And you were chiming in about it, and that was a weird conversation. Not because the idea that people being racist against a young fighter, like when you see a guy that's doing very well and has a lot of success, and then you see a lot of blowback and people are criticizing him. I always wonder, like, what is it that they're criticizing? They're criticizing his personal life, his behavior. Like, what is he doing that's so terrible?
Yeah.
Like, what is it? How much of that is racism? And when I said how much of that is racism, holy shit, did people get mad?
Yeah.
I said, I wonder how much of that is racism. And then I also said, I think he'd be more popular if he was white. And people were like, so you're saying that we don't like him because we're like, people made these these big jumps and big conclusions. I'm saying, are you saying that he wouldn't be more popular if he was white? Because I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's more white people than there are black people, and mm-hmm. white people tend to associate.
White people?
They want white heroes.
We like to see ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's true of all people. We like to see ourselves reflected outside of ourselves.
Yeah, I don't even think that's saying that he's not more popular because of racism. I think that's like a racial preference thing. Mm-hmm. But asking the question, I wonder if a lot of the blowback, a lot of the reason why people don't like him is racism.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little taken aback. Yeah. It was the front page.
I saw that. And that's why I chimed in, because I was like, I felt like, oh, Joe is experiencing something that I experience all the time in these discussions. And that's why I sort of reached out, like, I was trying to reach and go, hey, man.
Thank you.
I know what's happening here.
And I'm a white guy, yeah, so it's hilarious. It's hilarious.
Yeah, well, it's worse because you people acted like you turned traitor.
Exactly.
Which shows you how deep racism is that people who would not describe themselves as white people felt like you turned on them because you brought up race.
Well, people were saying, fuck you. They were tweeting me like some really mean shit. I was like, whoa, did you even listen to what I said? Because people didn't even listen. They saw it on print somewhere, and then it was on the cover of like a bunch of different news outlets saying, Joe Rogan attributes John Jones' lack of success to racism.
Yes.
All I said was that I wonder how much of it is racism.
Well, a similar thing, much smaller, happened to me recently. I wrote...
I saw it.
Yeah, BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed reached out to me and said, do you want to write a thing about lack of diversity in late night? And they're like, you may be over-talking about it. I go, no, I'll write a thing about it. I got things to say about it. And my thing was, it's true. I noticed... You can't say it's not white in late night, white and male, because they wanted to make it white. I was like, no, it's white and male. Let's be real. But my thing is, I'm not worried about late night. I'm not trying to. We need to stop focusing on getting a diversity in late night, and the rest of us need to do what we always do: find our own projects and create our own way, mm-hmm. and stop being the way that this is a reaction to late night talk show. That you like, I want to just talk. I don't want to have to do a skit and a thing. Right. Da, da, da. So, and then the Hollywood Reporter says W. Kamau Bell. Their headline was, "It's time for a black host in late night."
Yes, I saw that.
And I was like,
"That's not what you said."
That's not what I said.
I love your tweet to it too.
Yeah, yeah.
You said, "It's funny when I say, did you ever notice
people hear everything you know and love is wrong." And that's the same thing you found out, is when you go, I wonder, people here, you're a racist.
But I thought it was particularly shocking to me, because I'm a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, I wonder how much of it is racism, because are we pretending that racism isn't real?
Yes.
Well, there's 300 fucking 50 million people in this country, right? Mm-hmm. If there's 300 plus million people in this country, what percentage are racist? If it's 1%, mm-hmm. let's say it's 1%. We have more than 3 million racists,
mm-hmm.
okay? We know it's more than 1%.
Yes.
So what percentage has a hard time dealing with a dominant male athlete in a combat sport that beats the fuck out of everybody, mm-hmm. and is, like, young and brash?
And also has the thing that, like, there have been comparisons of John Jones to Ali, young mm-hmm. Ali. And he has the same thing Ali had, where he's considered to be an outsider to the sport. You know, that there's a thing with John Jones where it's like he can't... The stuff I've read about John Jones is that he's unorthodox, or he's mm-hmm. not... He didn't come up the way... He learned on YouTube videos. There's sort of this legend that has been created about him about, like, that he's not... That the sport... That he's not a guy like... I don't know. Like, you think about, like...
George St. Pierre.
No, I'm even thinking of the black guy. The guy who John Jones, they were friends, and then he beat him.
Rashad Evans.
Who sort of was raised by the sport through The Ultimate Fighter, and so people got to see him sort of like... people got to feel like, I saw that guy on the TV show, and now he's our champion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas John Jones sort of came from the outside and very quickly dominated, and that threatens people sometimes, too.
Well, he actually... there's a misconception when it comes to martial arts, and one of the big ones is that wrestling is not a martial art. Yeah. John was a very successful wrestler all throughout high school and college.
Yeah.
And that is... probably the most important martial art. The ability to dictate where the fight takes place is probably the most important aspect of fighting. Mm-hmm. And John was an outstanding wrestler. The only reason why he didn't go on to be a college star, because he got his girlfriend pregnant and had to get a job.
Yes.
That is why he got... But he was being actively recruited by a bunch of different universities because he was a very talented wrestler. And then, on top of that, he grew up with two fucking giant super athlete brothers,
yeah.
And they used to duke it out all the time.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
John's parents would laugh about how their kids would just wrestle and fight in the living room. And that is a reality. If you grow up with big brothers, you get used to combat in the household on a daily fucking basis. You got to fight for cereal.
Yeah.
You got to fight, this fucking dude took your basketball.
Yeah.
Someone, you know, someone's got your shit. You got to duke it out.
Got to fight to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You gotta yeah.
And even if it's not a real fight, there's competition, like
yes.
high level competition. So when he came out of nowhere, he was still a very good athlete and a very good wrestler. And wrestling is a hugely important martial art. So it's no more unusual than a guy who's a world class kickboxer mm-hmm. who enters into MMA and starts knocking people out. That's kind.
Yeah.
It's kind of to be expected.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a misconception.
I'm not saying, but it's definitely like you're black. You're better than everybody, and you didn't come up the way we want you to have come up into this sport.
Well, I don't know about that. But that's where we disagree.
Okay, I feel like that was the thing that when I first heard about John Jones was that there was the myth was created that, like, you know, he learned from watching YouTube videos. I remember hearing shit like that.
Well, he did learn very quickly.
Yeah,
he did learn very quickly,
and people kind of don't like. This is the thing we talk about, like with Cassius Clay, when somebody is so young and so much better than everybody.
Mm, yeah.
And then you put the black thing on top of that. He might have got that if he was white and so much better than everybody. They sort of get threatened by that.
Right.
And then you put black on top of it. It's like, that's a recipe for America.
Yeah. People. And then if we can find some fault in your character, was he drinking?
Yes.
And driving?
Which
and
to
he
me
hit
as a
tree?
As a professional athlete or especially in a combat sport, this is not polite things. You actually want your fighters to be badasses who drink and get in fights and do something. You know, to me, to fault him for that is ridiculous.
Well, it's very difficult to find a badass that doesn't do that.
Yes, yeah.
Like Donald Cerrone, who's one of the best fighters in the UFC, he's a real fucking crazy wild man. His name's Cowboy. His nickname's Cowboy. He wears a fucking cowboy hat everywhere. He literally was a bull rider.
Mm-hmm.
And drinks beer up until the day of the weigh-ins, okay? Takes the day off to weigh in, and then after the weigh-ins, we'll have a beer.
Yeah.
Like, the day before his fucking fight.
Yeah.
And in between fights, he's jet-skiing, wakeboarding. He's a wild motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's a white dude.
Yes.
So, like, all this talk about him drinking, and he's never, like, crashed a car, he's not married,
yeah,
he doesn't
yeah.
have... There's a bunch of shit that John was, like, involved in that gave people an excuse to be upset at him.
Yeah, they gave him an excuse, because if they liked him, that stuff would be the things that made him, like, oh, he's a badass, he doesn't
yeah.
give a shit.
He's out there driving his Bentley in a
yeah,
trees.
Yeah, like, that would yeah. be stuff that he was celebrated for if they liked him.
Yes, if
yeah.
they liked him.
Yeah.
But I heard people say, like, oh, he's so fake. Like, he's fucking 27 years old.
Yeah.
Do you even know who you were when you were 27? And if you were you the fucking light heavyweight champion of the world
no,
for
you
3 years?
We would have heard about
yeah,
you.
the amount of pressure and the scrutiny that he's under is just unprecedented.
Yeah, and I think that it's MMA at this point, I think, is a... I mean, I feel like that if I ever made like sort of fuck you money or money enough to, I would open jiu-jitsu gyms in the ghetto to train the next generation of black MMA fighters, because I feel like there's guys in there who could be MMA is a very white sport right now. Now, black guys historically have been fighters, like professional boxers, but professional boxing got so corrupt that the strongest, toughest black guy now plays for the NFL. He's not a boxer. He's not the heavyweight shield. I don't think there'll be a black heavyweight champion really ever again.
Really?
What
makes you say that?
Just because...
Do you know who Deontay Wilder is?
No.
Bad motherfucker.
Okay,
who's
well, I hope
upcoming,
there is.
Undefeated heavyweight
good.
Who's just smashing people.
Well, good.
Big, tall, long, lanky dude who's got... I think he's all knockouts. I think
okay.
his record is just... he's a guy that got famous recently because there was some crazy fuck who was on the internet who was talking all kinds of crazy shit to him, and so he met him in a boxing ring and beat the shit out of him.
Oh, I didn't see that.
You didn't see that?
No, I gotta see that. Yeah.
Yeah, some crazy guy who said some fucked up things about his daughter, and Wilder beat
That'll
the
do it.
Fuck out of him in a video that was on TMZ and everything.
Well, I just think that there's the culture of professional boxing in this country has changed in the black community that I think there's a sense of, like, if Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield can end up broke, what chance do I stand?
But Floyd Mayweather has untold amounts of money. It's a management issue.
Yeah, it is a management
issue. For
now,
is that what you're about to say?
Yeah,
how
yeah.
dare you?
I'm not trying to, I don't want to get a war with Floyd Mayweather started, but I just feel like who had more? Mike Tyson had untold amounts of money. Now, Mayweather has more because of
his
inflation.
He's a promoter also.
But Mike Tyson and Holyfield had untold amount of money at the time.
Right.
And they're both, I don't know how they're living, but they're not living the way they were.
But that's a management issue.
It is, but I think the problem is you come. It's the same thing we talked about earlier. You come out of the bad neighborhood. You learn. They learn you're an athlete. They don't teach you the rest. They don't teach you like how to be a good manager. You're signing with a boxing manager, Don King, who's just like, just sign this blank piece of paper. I'll take care of it. So it's a recurring process that happens in that thing. Whereas at least if you go to the NFL, you get a contract. you get an actual thing that we're going to pay you this much. Now it's not guaranteed. Or if you go to the NBA, you get a guaranteed contract. Or my theory is that a lot of those dudes go, instead of going into a boxing ring and getting my brains beaten out, I'm just going to hang out with the best basketball player in town and be in his posse. You know, that it doesn't pay as much, but at least I'm not getting ripped off.
I don't know.
Where's the black heavyweight champion? Why aren't black guys in boxing anymore? It used to be that it was a done deal that a black guy would be the heavyweight champion of the world.
There is a real problem, and that problem is a 6'6" Russian named Vladimir Klitschko, who's one of the best boxers the heavyweight division's ever known. I mean, Vladimir Klitschko is a bad motherfucker.
I'm not in any way, but it's just...
But it's weird. Who would have ever thought that there would be a white heavyweight champion that no one gives a fuck about?
Nobody,
that dude.
Yeah, the heavyweight champion used to be the most famous guy on the planet.
Yeah.
And that ended when Lennox Lewis retired, I think.
Dude, I was on a fucking plane with Vladimir Klitschko, and no one knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about whether I should interrupt him and say hi and say I'm a big fan. I'm like, that dude's probably so happy that no one's talking to him right now. Yeah. I'll leave him alone. But then I realized no one was talking to him. Nobody fucking talked to him.
A shift. The heavyweight champion used to be the most famous guy on the planet.
Yeah, my friend goes, man, that guy's fucking huge. I go, do you know that's a heavyweight boxing champion of the world? He goes, what?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a white guy?
Yeah.
That was his
yeah.
I go, that's Vladimir Klitschko.
Now, in Ukraine, he would be, I'm sure he gets mobbed.
In Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually speaks like 5 different languages. He's a PhD. He's a brilliant guy. I mean, it's a really unique guy to be a heavyweight champion. Him and his brother were heavyweight champions at the same time.
And didn't fight each other.
It was so strange.
I mean, boxing is so corrupt. I mean, there's like, you know.
But why do you say that? What do you think is corrupt about it?
I think
that's
because
that's kind of a cliche statement.
Well, here's why. I'll bring it to this. The UFC is doing a good job right now. It's a central organization that has a series of practices, and this is the way you have to do it, and that you can call it a monopoly if you want to, but it's a centralized organization that runs everything. Boxing is a bunch of different organizations that each set their own rules and don't. So there's not a way to go, how do we make these fighters fight? Like, you know, you can't avoid a fight. If you're the best guy in the UFC and there's a number two guy, you guys are going to fight.
Right.
But boxing, because it's a bunch of splinter organizations, we never got to see Holyfield and Tyson fight in their prime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of
Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Because of all the backwater deal. People are trying to protect their side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, I don't want him to fight that guy, because if he loses, then we lose all our things. So it's not what's good for the sport. It's what's good for the bottom line and the dollar. And so therefore it leads to corruption. It leads to like things that happen where, why aren't these fights happening? And also the thing with Don King, you know, Tyson will tell, you know, I'm sure you probably talked to Mike Tyson before, that mm-hmm. Don King became the biggest promoter because he was ripping everybody the fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no central authority to rule over and say, we have to clean this up.
Right.
And
I see what you're saying.
And so it leads to a lot of corruption, and it leads to, there's no reason that Mike Tyson should be broke right now, despite all the shit he went through. There's no reason.
See, that's where I disagree with you. I don't attribute that to corruption, and neither does he. He just went crazy and spent all his money. I mean, he has a fucking one-man Broadway show where he talks about, he shows $350 million. He goes,
yes.
I spent that much.
But he did spend that much, but he also, I'm sure, would tell you, and that somebody else took millions of dollars from him that they weren't supposed to have.
Okay, that is true. Someone stole money from him.
Yeah.
However, if he had that money, he would have spent it too.
Well, I wish I would like to give him the chance to spend it. That's all I'm saying.
I would have liked to have been with someone who was a financial advisor who would have set some money aside very early on. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
Alan Iverson has that?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
We were talking about that recently.
Yeah.
And Iverson turns 50, he gets millions of dollars.
He gets millions
right?
of dollars. So
he's
just working for the 76ers until that kicks in. And I think that that the Michael Jordan sort of established the modern NBA of like, no, get a money manager and get a guy who protects your things and don't invest in stupid shit. And so some people will end up broke.
But do you think that the NFL is corrupt? Do you think that the NBA is corrupt?
Not in the way that boxing is corrupt.
Well, look at it this way.
Because there's guaranteed
contracts.
Do you
know that 80% of NFL players within 2 years are bankrupt after they retire? 80%.
Yeah.
60-something percent of NBA players, same thing, bankrupt within 2 years of retirement. So I don't think it's an issue of corruption when it comes to how much money they blow, as much as they get that money, it's flowing in like a river.
I mean, yeah, I saw that ESPN documentary broke.
I didn't see it.
It's about that.
A guy like Mike Tyson grew up in Brownsville, poor as hell, and then all of a sudden he has hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes.
He's got tigers. Charlie Murphy came on my podcast and told a fucking story about Mike Tyson, about showing up at Mike Tyson's house and Mike Tyson on the front lawn playing with a tiger. Said he had a fucking tiger. Nobody would get out of the car. Everybody stayed in their car.
Yeah. But here's my thing. The corruption leads to people not wanting to participate in the sport in the same way. That's what I believe.
I don't think so, man.
I just think that you go, why don't I just be a football player?
I don't think they're looking at it in terms of this long-term thing. I think there's less people that are getting involved in boxing, first of all, because more people are getting involved in MMA. That's one thing that is definitely happening.
But black dudes aren't getting involved. I mean, maybe starting to, but that wasn't there was a gulf between the end of boxing being a big sport, the end of heavyweight champions being a big thing, and then the MMA taking prominence. And that, what was it? What happened in that gulf? Like between Lennox Lewis going, "I'm out," and to John Jones, there's like a gulf of like, where did all the black heavyweight champions go? Where did all the black dudes who were going to be heavyweight champions?
Well, there were still a lot of black fighters in the lower weight classes. Like that was Roy Jones was still around. There's Hopkins.
I was specifically thinking about
Sugar
like
Shane Mosley.
The heavyweight champion was the baddest motherfucker on the planet.
It's hard to find really big dudes that are willing to get punched in the face.
Yeah, that's true.
The other thing is, boxing is just so fucking hard to do in comparison to other sports like football.
Yeah.
Because not that football is not hard to do, but you could be a great football player and never have the courage to be able to step into a ring on your own in your underwear and go toe-to-toe with a guy.
Yeah.
Because you could, Bob could fucking drop the ball and you lose the game and you can still go out and party.
Yeah.
But if you get your ass kicked, you got your fucking ass kicked. You did it. It's all on you.
Yeah.
A lot of people are not psychologically built for that.
Well, that's the thing I think is interesting. For years they were. Holyfield and Tyson they were. And then And again, some of those dudes are getting concussions in the NFL. It's not like, I just think there's, that's my theory about it. I certainly don't know how to be right, but I just feel like the culture of the sport became so corrupt that I don't think people...
I see where you're coming from, but I really honestly don't think that it's coming from a point of like, okay, we've seen the future, this is where this ends up, let's not do this.
No, I don't, and that's not the future, but I think there's a sense that like, if you're a kid who's 6'3", 250, and you go, man, do I want to be a basketball player like LeBron James or Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant? Or do I want to be a boxer like a Vander Holyfield or wait a second. Those dudes are broke. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but they didn't have to be broke, man.
They didn't. I'm not saying they have.
More importantly than broke is brain damage. I think that is the most intelligent thing to avoid.
Yes.
I think that as different economic groups excel in the culture, they become less likely to be fighters. That is one thing that happens on a pretty consistent basis.
Yeah, whoever on the bottom of the economic, that's why it was Irish dudes, it was Jewish dudes in boxing. Yeah.
I think it was Italians
for a while.
It's also boxing is like brain damage is fucking unavoidable.
Yes.
And
you can't do it for long without, I mean, I think Lennox Lewis got out when he was like, okay, I've beaten everybody.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's just going to be about taking too many hits to the head.
Yeah, and very smart. I mean, he's shown a little bit of deterioration, though.
How could you not?
You can't.
How could you not?
Yeah, nobody rides for free.
I mean, I was a big boxing fan, so I sort of missed the fact that the heavyweight title was like an event.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he was like this, that it was a thing everybody paid attention. People who didn't care about boxing knew who the heavyweight champion was.
The Klitschkos are boring as fuck. They're boring
because they're smart and they're not going in there they're not trying to have blood wars. Like,
no.
You know, when you watch 1970s boxing and it's like, 15 rounds.
Ernie Shavers.
Like, yeah. And it's a dude who like breaks his jaw in the third round and says, I'm good. No, I didn't break my jaw. I didn't break my jaw. Yeah. Like it's like, you know, I'm a huge Ali fan. Like, yep. I'm a huge, another surrogate dad.
Ali Ken Norton when he broke his jaw.
And they just still, no, yep. don't tell anybody. Yep. You know, like, I'll see you at the hospital later. Mm-hmm. You know, so that I miss that spectacle of, like, I mean, I remember being in a video store in Chicago and they had the Tyson fight on and it was like, what, maybe it was like Carl the Truth
Williams.
Yeah. And it was like that thing where me and my friend go, let's just stay a minute. This will only take a minute. And it did. You know, like, I like that, you know, and so, you know, that's I'm a fan of that, and I miss it, and I don't think all those dudes ended up in MMA yet. I mean, maybe they will. I think most of them, a lot of them ended up in football, and a lot of them ended up in basketball.
Remember Terry Norris. Terry Norris was one of those guys from that day. He was a big star. He's all fucked up now, man.
Yeah.
I ran into him in Vegas a few years back, and I was listening to him talk to some fans, and he was slurring his words and could barely mm-hmm. put a sentence together, and I was like, damn, I remember when Terry Norris was the champ.
Yeah, and it's weird to think about Ali, for example.
Yeah.
The jury's out whether he got his Parkinson related
syndrome. I'll stop
syndrome.
That right now. Yeah. Fuck that jury. The jury's filled with idiots. Yeah, I'll tell you, from a person who has a lifetime investment in combat sports, that's 100% trauma related.
Okay, yeah.
Parkinson's is a trauma related disease in a lot of people. Freddie Roach has Parkinson's related trauma.
Okay.
It's one of the reasons why he forced Manny Pacquiao to take a whole year off after Marquez knocked him out. He's like, dude, you're not fighting now. We're going to take a year off.
Yeah, yeah. To get yourself. So Ali, who's still alive, we sort of almost treat him like he's dead.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, like, he just joined Twitter and you're like, it's just weird to be like, right. And some of them are coming from the champ. And you're like, are they really?
What? Come on.
And it's that thing where it's like, if Ali was still, because he's not that old, he's in his 70s. I mean, he's old, but he's not like, you know, he's not 100.
Right.
If he was still around and still talking and talking relatively fast and he'd be an ambassador for you should be a boxer.
Right.
But because of, like you said, the trauma-related injuries, he has not, there's no old boxer is a good ambassador for boxing.
Except Bernard Hopkins, which is ridiculous. 49 years old, still the champ, talks great, still full of energy, outboxes the shit out of some young guys. He's a freak, man.
Well, it's that thing we just talked about earlier. Some people are doing crystal meth and it's fine. It's the same thing. Not everybody has to take the hits.
Well, he's also got a very intelligent style. He doesn't brawl with anybody. He brawls on his terms. Mm-hmm. He clinches a lot. He holds on to guys. He'll use roughhouse tactics to push them out of their game. And he's just aware. He understands what to do. Like, before, boxing is one of those things where if you look at it on, like, if you don't have any education in boxing and you watch it on television, like, well, this guy's trying to hit this guy and the other guy's faster so he can't hit him. No, there's footwork involved. There's mm-hmm. He's doing movements that get you to react, and he's anticipating your reaction and then giving you another thing to think about. And then when you react to that, you're going to step here and he's ready with an overhand right.
Yes.
And these things are all, in his mind, these are all foregone conclusions. Mm-hmm. But to a young guy, he's just going to use his speed. But you don't ever get a chance to use that speed.
Yeah.
He's already on you. He's already making you move and dance to his rhythm. He's the marionette. You're the puppet.
Yeah.
And you don't realize until it's the 10th round, you're getting your ass kicked. And you're like, fuck. And they're like, you need a knockout. You're like, I can't even fucking hit him. You know?
I haven't touched him since the first round.
Did you see that Russian guy that he beat for the light heavyweight title?
No.
Shit. He's boxing the shit out of this guy. And then in the 10th round, blam, drops him. They're like, you know, you need to stop him. In the 10th round, Hopkins drops him. They're like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
You can't even hit him.
No.
It's just too good. Too slick.
In college, I briefly joined a boxing club and got hit by a dude who was not a professional boxer. The hardest I've ever been hit in my life. And I was like, I think I'm done with this boxing club. Like, you know, you get rocked hard. And I'm like, I think I'm going to just go back to class. I think I'm trying to be a comedian.
But boxing, to be taught properly, should be taught where you don't hit each other hard at all.
Well, this was like a guy who had, like, an ex, it's in Philadelphia, this guy was an ex boxer, had fought Sugar Ray Leonard, like, that was his big story. It lost to Sugar Ray Leonard, which is
remember his name?
No, this was a long time ago. I don't remember his name. But he was I would recognize, he fought Sugar Ray Leonard in Philly at the Blue Horizon, lost the fight. But
Blue
that was
Horizon.
His, yeah. Like, he played the video for us, but, you know, he just sort of put, it was a block boxing club. He just sort of put us in a room and there was no ring. It was just like, and there was one
survival
guy who was, we were the same height. So, but that guy, he outweighed me. I was like 6'4", 190. He was like 6'4", you know, 260 or something. And it's like, I don't think we're actually in the same weight class.
Oh.
And he was a guy and he rocked me and it was just that thing. And I had headgear on. I was like, oh yeah, this is not, I think I'm a use words.
Yeah, you could learn how to box, but you got to learn how to box today, especially in today's day and age. You got to learn how to do it from someone who respects brain trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and understands, like, the goal is not to just go in there and beat the shit out of each other and the strong person survives. The goal is to teach someone how to move their head so they don't get hit. Mm-hmm. When he's got his right hand there, that means the punch is coming this way. I want you to duck under it, and then you counter. And do everything nice and slow at first. Yeah. Develop the movements, and then when you spar in a very controlled way, and you'll actually get better at it. And then, you know, you could actually become a real boxer. But the problem is, a lot of these gyms, they don't want pussies, so they'll just take you and they'll throw you in there. Yeah, lace them up.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Although now there's cardio boxing which is not exactly what you're talking about, where it's like we're just pretending to box.
Well, they're hitting bags mostly, and they're doing it with poor form. Like I went to a cardio boxing class and I was watching these people hit the bag. I'm like, no one's even telling them to do it right.
Yeah,
like everything they're doing, they're all fucking wailing their arms all goofy, and they're not throwing their hips. They're lifting their feet up when they punch, and no one's correcting them.
No,
I'm like, this is not boxing. This is just hitting shit. Just hitting shit is exercise.
Yes.
You know, you can't even call it cardio boxing. But it is interesting what you said about the heavyweight division, that the heavyweight division being this division that's sort of... But you still have guys like Adrian Broner that are coming up. You still have guys...
I have not paid attention in a long time because it sort of became a thing where it just felt like a desert. Like,
it's just a heavyweight division.
Yeah. No, I will watch Manny Pacquiao.
These fucking Russians have a stranglehold on that motherfucker.
And they're not letting it go. It'll be interesting to see because he's still the champ, right, Klitschko?
Oh, yeah.
When he fights... Because he's pretty old, too. He's not a young dude.
No, he's like 40.
Yeah, that when he retires, like, what happens? Like, what... You know, I think that boxing could use a central organization that sort of like...
It's never going to happen.
No, and I think that's...
You know why? Because you can start your own organization.
Gyms in the ghetto. That's why I'm going to start to...
Well, MMA has done it in a way where, like, if you organized an event, like you call it the WFO, whatever the fuck it is, and you decided to have an event, and you say, this is my WFO world champion, that's a world champion. That's what the WBA does for boxing, the IBF, the IBO. There's all these different organizations, WBC.
Yeah.
UFC is the thing.
That's
like
thing.
The NFL Super Bowl champion is the fucking NFL champion.
Yeah, there's no question that whoever wins the Super Bowl is the best football team in the world at that point. There's not a football team in Europe that's like, no, we could actually. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the problem is with boxing is there's so many organizations. And once that happens, you can't take it back.
No.
You know, you can't get all those people together and say, hey, let's all form one organization and we'll split the money. Put the fuck out of here.
No, then that's everybody wants the money is what dictates the thing. So that there, I mean, I remember when unifying the title was three titles.
Yep.
It was the WBA, the WBC, and like the IBF, I think.
IBF was late in the game.
Yeah, IBF was late in the game.
IBF came
around
like the 80s, I believe.
Yeah, I remember when
people resisted
Riddick
that.
Both, I think he threw it in the trash, threw one of the titles in the trash can. And
yeah, that was right. That was a big deal,
Yeah.
Like, well, it's also they pay ridiculous sanctioning fees. The sanctioning fees to fight for a WBA title is fucking through the roof. It's crazy money.
Yeah.
Like, for what are you fucking... What am I getting out of this? Giving you $1 million, and what the fuck are you getting?
Yeah, this is again. Maybe some wouldn't call it corruption, but I think that's the corruption. It's just everybody's trying to get as much of the money as they can, but it's not good for the sport.
You know what it should be, man? It should be like Ring Magazine.
Yes.
You know, Ring Magazine has the ring champion. I don't think they have to pay to be the ring champion.
No,
everybody should abandon everything but the ring title.
Yes.
Ring Magazine is not going to do you dirty. They're the people that know.
They want the sport to be good.
Yeah.
They want the best. And I think that's the problem with
there's money in it.
Yeah.
There's money in deciding who's, you know, the WBC or the WBA. Yeah.
It's that unchecked capitalism thing.
Fucking communism as a point.
Yeah. No, I'm
socialism.
Not trying to do that. I enjoy this phone that was made by Chinese children, but I also think that we should probably pay them a living wage, you know? They ought to make good phones, but let's pay them a living wage.
Whenever you have nets around the building where you work to keep people from jumping off the roof, because there's so many fucking people jumping off that you need nets.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe we should look into this.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should. Right. Yeah. Do you think there's a way around that? Because that drives me nuts about not just cell phones, but about like people that drive like Priuses and shit and say, I'm helping the environment. I'm being socially conscious. Hey, you're also driving a fucking box filled with conflict minerals.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So every fucking lithium ion crystal in that came out of a fucking mine in the ground in Africa, and it's likely a child that might have been pulling it out.
Somebody said to me the other day, because of my act and the way I talk about things, like, how would you identify yourself? Are you a socialist or a communist? Like, no, dude, I just went to the Apple store and got me an iPod Touch. I'm a very proud, I'm maybe a reluctant capitalist, but I also like a nice house too. I just think that there's
ethics.
Like, there's ethics for all. Like, if I'm like, when I go to pay, when I went to go try to buy a new phone and they said it's going to be $700, if I thought that $700 was actually going to a living wage for somebody, maybe, I don't know if I'd buy it, but I would think about it. But I know it's like, you're just making up a price.
Yeah.
This is not actually a pot. Like, we're probably paying too little for our phones. They should probably all be twice as much as they are.
Yeah.
But we all know this thing where, I want the 50, isn't it $50 with a free rebate or something?
Right.
We want that. But that's a problem, because that doesn't help the world. It's the same thing with the minimum wage, raising the minimum wage. Like, it's... If you raise the minimum wage, you have less job turnover. You have people have more pride in their job, because customer services sucks in this country, because the dude got hired 2 days ago, and he's looking for a new job.
Isn't there also, like, when you look at the amount of profit that Apple has made, and Apple has something like $60 billion in the fucking bank, like, how much would you have in the bank if you paid people more money to make those phones, and you made them in America, and you made less profit, but the people all made a living wage? Like, yes. Can we work that out on paper?
I could see
what that would be.
Well, it's the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing with Walmart. Like, if they paid everybody like $12 an hour, they would make like $3 billion. Like, it's right. Still, yeah, it's not like, how much profit do you need to make? And at some point, and I get that you're allowed to set the price whatever you want. I feel like I'm talking to my dad in my head right now. Yeah, like, my dad has this. The market has this. But we all have to agree, we live in a society.
Yeah.
That we're not individuals living on our little islands, but I think corporations treat it like we are all our own little country.
Well, there's a reason why there's something like a minimum wage, and that we all kind of agree there should be some minimum wage, is because corporations have no fucking soul.
No.
They're just about money. They're about bottom line. In fact, their duty to their shareholders is to increase their bottom line, and they have to make more every year.
Yes. Yeah, they can't have flat growth.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, like, we made $1 billion last year. We only made $1 billion this year. What's happening down there? What's happening to those kids in that factory? Yeah.
They need to make less.
They need to. And so the thing that I think is, like, and the thing with the minimum wage is that it hasn't kept up with inflation. If minimum wage just tracked with the economy, with inflation, and it would be fine, but it has not kept up. And so, and, you know, my dad, when I talked to my dad about it, he's like, well, those jobs are pass-through jobs. You're not supposed to work at Walmart forever. Hey, the factory left town.
Yeah.
There's no good union jobs. There's not a lot of good union jobs where you can work at the GM factory for 25 years and retire with a gold watch.
Yeah.
Walmart is the factory.
I feel like there's some jobs that are really good for kids. There's some jobs when kids just get out of high school and they have an entry-level job. There are some jobs that probably shouldn't pay a shitload of money, but...
No, not a shitload, but they should, yeah.
If you're working all week, you should be able to live on that.
Yes, yes.
If you're putting in
full-time work, you should be able to afford to...
You should be able to eat, and you should be able to sleep somewhere.
And the government should want you to be able to actually not just live for yourself, but also be married and afford to have a few kids, because that all feeds the economy.
Right.
Like, you shouldn't want somebody to be struggling and not afford to, I guess we can't have a kid, and I guess, or whatever, we can only have one.
You need a better job, Kamau. What you need to do is you need to get out of North Dakota somehow and find yourself a good place where you can get a good income.
Exactly. Yeah, move to San Francisco where you can't afford to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can get a $4 million shack.
Yeah. So it's to me that's so clear that, like, no, if we raise the minimum wage, it helps the economy. Certainly, Cinder, but I have a small business, and if I raise the minimum wage, your employees won't be so shitty. That's what'll happen. And they won't quit every 2 weeks.
Yeah, how much money should it be, though? What should the minimum wage be?
I mean, I'm not an economist, but I think $15 an hour is not outside the bounds of...
No, it's not unreasonable.
For somebody who's like... And I think, I don't even have a problem if you track it to the city. Like, I think some cities you need $17 an hour, and some cities maybe you need $12.
Right.
You know, I think that's just the way it goes. Because, like, San Francisco...
Cost of living.
San Francisco has a higher minimum wage than the national minimum wage.
Does it?
Yes. It's like, I don't know what the national minimum wage, but San Francisco is
like $7 or something.
It's like $8.50, I think.
Okay,
because they know that it's
still
fucking
ridiculous.
It's fucking San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, it's still not enough, but at least there's the service about, we realize that this city is not North Dakota.
There's three things that you bring up where people will go fucking bananas about: climate change, racism,
yes,
and minimum wage.
And we've talked about all three of them. All right.
When you start talking about minimum wage, the fucking quote-unquote economic experts.
Yeah.
By the way, here's what I've noticed. most of them aren't rich. One of the people that fucking chime in on these discussions, I've had deep conversations with these people, like back and forth for a long time, but I know zero about economics.
Yeah.
I don't, and so when I've said, hey, I just think that people should be able to live on the amount of money that they make during the week, and people come up with all these reasons why that's bullshit and all these reasons why that's bad for business and all these reasons, and I eventually, in the conversation, I get to, how much do you make? Mm-hmm. What do you do? Mm-hmm. Are you? Do you run a business? Are you? No, none of them run fucking businesses. They all have this idea in their head that America is filled with people, and I've read this quote somewhere, I forget who to attribute it to, that think that they are about to become a millionaire,
yes,
and they want to make sure that there's no laws in place,
yes,
they're going to fuck them over once they become a millionaire.
Yeah, no, it's people, it's the reason why people vote against their own personal interests, because I'm going to vote with the, and I'm not trying to, but I'm going to vote with the Republican Party because they don't want taxes. And one day I'm going to be rich and I'm not going to want taxes. Even though it's like, well, right now you're getting, you some taxes might help you. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
it would help you. It would help your community and your neighborhood. But no, one day.
So weirdest thing in the world is people that are Republican that are broke that are voting for corporate interests.
Yes, yes.
It's like, what are you doing?
Because people think that everybody thinks they're one, not everybody, but a lot of people think they're one lottery ticket away from being in the 1%.
Or one step, or one invention.
Or one jump shot, know, like, so.
But it's weird how the Republican Party is like a party that supports big business, like sort of unequivocally, yet they're more supported by under income, like lower income conservative people.
It's the reason why people who don't live in New York like the Yankees, because they feel like they're the best. They're the winning team. And even though it's not connected to, even though it's not connected to them, they just feel like, I want to be with the winners.
It's also the team that is most aligned with Jesus.
is the Yankees most aligned with Jesus?
No, okay. Republicans.
Oh, Republicans. Yes. No. And Republicans, by tying patriotism to God, have swept a whole bunch of people in there. I saw a sign in Alabama that said, "America bless God." I don't even know what that means, but that was a billboard that I saw that was sort of, and so we're like, wait, we're,
is when, that,
yes, well, God bless America, but it was actually like putting, it was sort of saying, no, we,
America's the God.
America's the God. And I was like, I'm not sure what that means, but clearly I don't think I want to rent a house here.
America's better than the creator of the universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How awesome
if you
is
believe
that?
In the creator of the universe, America's better than that.
So we bless the creator of the universe.
Yes, yes.
Give you a little pat on the head, God. Yeah, good job making us.
Good job making us. You did
we'll take it
job.
From here.
Yeah, yeah. We'll take it from here. That's the new America, U.S. slogan. We'll take it from here.
America bless. Oh, there it is. America bless God.
I need you at my house.
Look at that fucking billboard.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's a cunty flying lizard. Have you ever met a lizard? I mean, an eagle?
No.
You ever seen an eagle?
No.
I saw one last summer for the first time in real life. And you look into the eyes of that heartless monster. You're like, how the fuck is this our national bird?
Yeah.
This is our national
animal.
Aren't
they animal. Like crazy a little bit? Or
they? They're dinosaurs.
Yeah. Oh,
they're dinosaurs that survived. If you pulled away all the feathers, and by the way, they think that most dinosaurs had feathers now. They're starting to reconsider the idea of dinosaurs and feathers. Like, they think a lot of dinosaurs had feathers. So they essentially are fucking dinosaurs.
So that gives Steven Spielberg a way to re-release all the Jurassic Park movies. Now with feathers.
They don't know what the fuck was on those things. They don't know what color they were. They know they had some sort of skin, but all they have is bones and speculation. But in more and
we
more,
we like to think our lizards are green, so we just make them green. Yeah.
Well, they also think that T-Rex might have been like vulture shaped or vulture colored, like bright red faced and black body, because they think that he might have been like intimidating, because they think he was more of a instead of a predator, he was more of a carrion eater. He was probably stole food away from somebody else who killed it, because his body's all fucked up.
Yeah.
The way he would,
doesn't have
like,
the arms.
Can't really run that good, they think. They also speculate about the Earth's atmosphere being different then. That's one of the reasons why things grew so big. It was a more oxygen-rich and dense atmosphere. But they think that there's a lot of dinosaurs that had feathers.
Mm-hmm.
So a fucking eagle is a dinosaur. So when you're looking at that thing with a bolt cutter for a face, you know, like, how is this heartless, evil, baby-stealing, flying monster... That's us.
That's America. I don't know. There's something about that sounds like America.
America sounds like an
eagle flying into the Foxconn factory in China and swooping out the iPhones and taking them away. That sounds kind of like us.
And with a baby in one hand just fucking drops it in the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. That's sort of a thing that happens.
Yeah, their talons, these big, long, that are so good they can steal fish from a river.
What you're not mentioning, Joe, is that that cavemen were also living with them at the same time. If you go to
riding them.
If you go to the Creation Museum.
Have you been?
I know. I've been through that area and heard about it. But
I've heard it's awesome.
Yeah.
The Creation Museum is supposed to be so awesome. They have like these lectures. They explain how dinosaurs were mentioned in the Bible. And
How they were all here together.
Did Noah forget them? Is that what happened?
Yeah, they forgot them.
He was on the
boat. Dinosaurs were late.
Shit, dinosaurs.
That dinosaur people time. Yeah, DPT.
I love when people get wacky ideas like that in their head and they just ride them out to the very end.
I think it's so funny to me because people think that they're supposed to be able to, some people, and especially in religion, it's sort of, you know, think they're supposed to be able to figure everything out. Well, no, everything should be easily explained to them, and everything should most shit shouldn't make sense to you.
It doesn't have to make sense.
You have a job, that's the thing that's supposed to make sense to you. But everything else, you don't have to know why things work the way they are, unless that's your job.
Well,
let science handle it. There's a lot of people working on that shit.
There's also a lot of people that like attribute, like, really complex mechanisms to, like, impossibility. Like, they say, you're telling me that 14, whatever it was, billion years ago, something created the universe out of nothing. And then from there, you can see with your eyes. Like, okay. Yeah, I mean, man, where do we begin?
You know, I go, yes, that's what I'm telling you. Next question.
It's like when you're saying, I could never make a cell phone. I don't know what's in a cell phone. Sure you do. You just got to do the work.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. But I couldn't, if somebody brought me all the parts and said, put it together, and I don't need to know how to do it to believe that it's doing a job. But some people act like they need to know how a thing works for it to make sense. It needs to make sense. Then, like, no, you didn't study that.
Yeah.
So you don't know that.
Well, you're telling me a single-celled organism can become a giraffe.
Yes, I am. Next question.
Yeah, it takes millions of years, fucker.
Or don't worry about it. Let the people who went to college for that worry about that.
I don't trust them because they're all liberals.
Exactly.
Bunch of liberals and queer lovers.
And those liberals brought you your iPhone. You're not worried about that. So just
that
enjoy.
Is true.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of conservative think tanks creating the most innovative new cell phones.
No.
Right? That's a weird thing, a comforting thing that I like about a lot of these internet-based, tech-based businesses. They seem to be very ethical and moral. Like, they seem to have a connect, like Google, especially Google, and a lot of these companies, they're way more open and way more intelligent about their approach to ethics and morals than a lot of like other corporations.
I mean, but I think it's probably like if Walmart is way over here, is not ethical, moral. Some people would say that Facebook is here.
Mm.
They wouldn't say it's like all the way up to the other
Facebook
side.
Facebook is tricky.
Facebook. Yeah, I think that, like, you know, they own all our information. They have, like, basically have
they
given
sell
them all
it too.
Yeah, and they sell it and they make, you're like, how does this make money if I'm not paying for it?
Well, how's the weird thing when you go to Google search something and it shows you like all sorts of other shit that you might be interested in on the right hand side? And you're like, wait a minute, how the fuck do you know what I like?
Yeah, or the new thing where they show, like, I looked up a heavy, like a punching bag. Like, I was thinking about buying maybe I'll buy a punching bag. And now every time I go to websites, I'm being advertised for Everlast bags. I'm like, I did that one time.
Yeah.
I did a half hour looking at punching bags and went, nah, it's dumb. I'm not going to do that.
Can you just dump your cookies or something like that? And that,
I guess you could, but it's just that thing that I don't think about until I'm like, why is it telling me why is it telling me about, like, I've made I made a reservation at this hotel I'm staying at. Now my computer is advertising me to stay at the hotel I'm staying at. No, I did it. You already got me. They already got my money. No, I'm not gonna. I'm already staying there.
Well, it gets even weirder when you have a Google phone, because when you have a Google phone, it'll tell you, like, you look something up and it'll show you like how many minutes that is from your home. And you're like, how the fuck do you know where I live?
Yeah, yeah. No,
like it knows where you go every night, so it assumes that's your home. So it tracks that down, and then where you are, you're 23 minutes from your home.
Yeah.
The fuck do you know where I live?
You should leave for work now. Why do you know that? What are you telling me? Or the thing that I find with my Google phone, the technology is still not working. The way I will Google something like in LA, like, oh, where's that thing? Just something that's not even, it's just like, oh, where's that thing? Because I'm curious about where it is. Okay, there it is. And then I was in San Diego a couple days ago, and it was like, it's 4 hours to that location. You Googled in Los Angeles. Like, why would I need to know that now? I'm not going there. You're just telling me. 4 hours?
It's slowly starting to get smart, but it's not quite.
It's not quite there. It's not quite there.
But if it does get too smart, it's going to be so intrusive.
Or I like to say convenient.
Mm.
I mean, you see the movie Her?
No.
It's a good. I think it's a good. It's a good flick. You know what it is? It's
yeah.
It. We want that. Sort maybe of. Not the sex. Well, actually, some of us want the sex part of it, but we want to be able to walk into our home and go, pull up my email, pull up my Netflix queue, and da 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 da, and then you want to go to work and be like, send me that. We want that. That's what this is all about. Is yeah. That
in a lot of
and
ways.
And in some ways, you're saying people say we're giving up privacy, but people are willing to give up privacy if it comes with a coupon and some free stuff. You know what I mean?
Until it bites them in the ass.
Until it bites them in the ass. And that's the question. We all have a different place where our ass is.
Yeah.
We all have different size and shaped asses. And someone's like, it's not biting me in the ass yet. And I'm like, ow. Yeah. But you know, the thing with the NSA, it's like, it's hard to say they trolled all our data when we're the ones who said, here, would you like our data? Mm-hmm. Would you like our data?
True. Yeah.
You know, you download Candy Crush to your phone and you think, I'm just playing a fun game for free. And it's like, no, it knows where you are now.
But the real problem is that we didn't know that the government was able to read your emails anytime they want. And these workers could just like download your dick pics.
It's just funny.
Send them off to each other. If Edward Snowden is telling the truth, I mean, yes. Obviously I don't know, but he said that there's people in his office that were downloading emails from ex-girlfriends and shit and sharing photos and stuff. And
I feel like you say like people didn't know that, and I feel like every black barbershop around the country has been talking about that shit for years. Black people have always been like, the CIA, you know, the CIA invented crack. You know what I mean? Like that level of like, we're being watched at all times. Because every time I walk into a store, there literally is a guy watching me. You know what I mean? So I think in the black community, I don't think the NSA story was as big of a, oh yeah, the government's watching us. Yeah.
Well, the black community and the truther community should get together.
Yeah, that never seems to work out. Because the truther community goes, there was no slavery. Okay. All right, guys.
I had a CIA guy in here, former CIA director of operations, whatever the fuck he was, really nice guy, but I played him, this guy Michael Rupert, talking about how they were selling drugs. He was a former LA narcotics officer who literally caught the CIA selling drugs in black communities.
Yeah.
And was addressing the director of the CIA at the time, who got fired right after this, and I played it for him on the podcast, and just watching him try to dance around it.
That's what I'm thinking.
I let it go after a while, but yeah, I didn't get into like Gary Webb or any of the cocaine plane that had been to Guantanamo Bay twice. It crashed with tons of cocaine in it in Mexico. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that the CIA might have been involved in some form, or someone in the CIA.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, you know, the black people can't flood the ghetto with drugs.
How are they getting it?
Yeah, we can't, you know. I mean, every now and again, there's a Rick Freeway Ross, but there's not.
But that was the guy that I had on the podcast. Yeah, I had Freeway Ricky on three times.
Yeah.
And one of the times that I had him on was he discussed how he got into a connection with this guy who was directly sending the profits to the fucking Contras.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole Contras and Sandinistas thing in Nicaragua, which was the Oliver North scandal that was on television, was all out of Freeway Ricky selling the coke.
Yes.
I mean, it's incredible.
And you feel like a little bit, I feel like at least the black guy made some money off of that. I mean, yeah, not certainly he, I don't know if he would do it all again.
Oh, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
He definitely wouldn't. He's an interesting guy. He's learned a lot from it. I mean, he taught himself how to read in jail once he was arrested for that, and then found a loophole in the argument that got him arrested for three strikes, because it's supposed to be three different charges. And he got two different charges, was one time he was arrested.
Okay.
And that doesn't count as a three strikes law, so they had to let him out. He was going to be in jail for the rest of his life. He figured that out on his own after he learned how to read in jail.
Yeah, I believe it. And it's funny, I met him at a party one time, and it was when I had the show. And so when I had the show, I would get like attention from people who normally wouldn't talk to me, you know, like, and so I met him at a party, and he was very nice, but he's like, hey man, give me your number. And I just had this weird, like, okay. I felt like, I don't know, Mr. Ross, if I want you to... Okay, I'll give it to you, sir. I'll give it to you.
Did you see Jim Norton's Vice show where he interviewed him?
Oh, I haven't seen it yet, no.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. He's an interesting guy, man. And, you know, he's a real deal. I mean, he really did have a multi-million dollar cocaine industry. And it was really going to the government.
Yes.
I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah, no, and I feel like, again, as a person who sat in a lot of black barbershops in the basement of churches, I'm like, yeah, you don't get to tell me. Okay, I don't believe in a lot of conspiracy theories, but to me, that doesn't feel like a conspiracy theory. That feels like, well, of course, how else would you get cocaine and crack in the ghetto unless somebody was greasing the palms to make that happen, and that person worked in the government, and that was the government.
Well, not only that, if I was sitting around the government and I was sitting around with a bunch of military industrial complex leaders and everyone's, you know, going over how to make money, you go, you guys aware how much coke is getting sold in this country?
Yeah.
It's a lot of coke. We're not going to stop that. Okay. Yeah. They're going to always. So who's going to make this money? Do we want the fucking Colombians to make the money, or mm-hmm. should we just make the money?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should probably make the money. Yeah, we're not gonna.
Yeah,
not gonna stop coke.
But I feel like I don't know if they even have the "we're not gonna stop it" conversation. I feel like it's like a new stock thing. Hey, coke's making a lot of money. Let's invest in that. I don't feel like it gets to the hey, we can't stop the people from, you know. I don't think it's that Godfather discussion where like they're animals anyway. Let them destroy themselves. I think it's like, oh, that's making a lot of money. It's
let
like,
them lose their souls.
Yeah, it's it's Apple's making money. We should invest in that. And cocaine in the ghetto's making money. Yeah.
Not only that, the big impediment, like what's the big problem? It's law enforcement. We got that.
Yeah,
you're gonna be fine.
We already have that under control.
Well, that's where Michael Rupert stepped up, because he was a former LA narcotics officer. He was a guy who was involved in busting cases, and he told his story in no uncertain terms how he was told to let a case go because it involved the CIA. He's like, what are you fucking saying? Are you telling me that the CIA is selling drugs in the black community? No, I'm telling you, let this case go because this case that you busted people is actually the CIA. Like, what the fuck are you saying?
Yes, yes. And that's why we have the police. That's why the black community has a problem with police in this country.
One reason, right?
It's hard to believe that that's the voice of authority if you feel like the voice of authority is not honoring its own authority.
You know, it's interesting. The Bay Area is also interesting because of Oakland, mm-hmm. which the police are notoriously horrible.
Yes.
Like,
extra horrible.
Yeah, why is that?
I mean,
because Oakland's crazy? Because it's a crazy
town? No, it's
not
because Oakland's. I mean, Oakland now is becoming gentrified, so Oakland is now one of the cities that you find in America's top places for people to live. White people.
So what is white people?
Yeah, it's because it's becoming gentrified. So Oakland is really is really struggling with the fact that it's being gentrified very quickly. But it's just communities that are not even majority black, because as much as people think Oakland's a black city, it's like 30% black. It's not, you know, people go, it's funny how few black people you have to have for people to go, there's a lot of black people in here.
30% is more than the national average.
It is more than the national average, but it ain't 70%.
What's the national average?
It's like 11, I think, it's like somewhere around 12 or 11.
Well, guess what? If you have 11, that's a black neighborhood.
Exactly.
If you have 11% black
weird?
People,
that's
a lot
that's
of black people.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, most white neighborhoods are 100% white.
Yeah. And
that's weird.
And if a black family moves in, it's like, what's happening?
Yeah, what's going on over there?
What's going on over here? Oakland, like a lot of cities that are thought of to be black cities, are over-policed and underserved, you know, because people... That to me, it's like it's a structural institutional racism problem. That for example, and we can talk about it or not talk about it, but so that if a guy walks down the middle of the street saying like sort of being a teenager who's a loud guy walking down the street, a white teenager might get told, get the fuck out of the street. And the guy, I'm not getting out of the street. Dude, grab him, put him on the corner. Don't do that shit again. But a black teenager who walks down the middle of the street and goes, I'm not getting out of the street, ends up dead. Is my opinion on that situation that we get that even that things that would be sort of like if you're white they would be like all right we're not going to make a big deal out of this, that when you're black it can end up in your death because of the approach to policing black people in this country.
Do you think that that's a problem inherent with police officers, or is it because they're dealing with so much violence that's coming from black people? Is it because they've been told to handle cases differently?
I think it's America was founded on racism. So I think I'm not going to necessarily say cops are the problem. Cops, the way black people are policed is a symptom of the fact that America, the cornerstone of America is racism. And everything we built was on that. And that's why people, you know, when you want to have the reparations discussion, it's like, you know how we got a lot of cheap labor in this country? Like, you know, how do we get to be the richest country in the world for a while? Because we had a 400-year head start on the labor. You know what I mean? Like, people weren't being paid to build this country. So I think that when the cornerstone of this country is founded on racism and the people who police the country are trying to protect the country's reputation and name, that means that a lot of times they use racism as a part of how they police the country.
How can you ever fix a scenario where the entire culture was established with slave labor? If a giant percentage of what made America what it is was established because of slave labor, how does that get fixed? Like, how does that ever balance it out? How does it? Does it just come naturally over a course of a long period of time?
No, it definitely doesn't come naturally.
Does it have to be socially engineered?
It has to be. Yeah, something has to jumpstart the process. I think that you can't say affirmative action in this country without some people going, but then a white man won't have a job. And it's like, but actually, it's like you have to jumpstart the process. You have to, and maybe it's for me. It's like if. I literally said that. I said this earlier. If every black person in this country was given therapy, because I feel like being black in America, right. You have a mild form of PTSD or a severe form of PTSD, depending upon where you live. And if you made it, and you guaranteed that the schools in the inner city were good, that they were well-funded public schools where you may not get a good education here, but this is a place where good education happens easily.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true of most schools in the inner city. And if you said, and if you made it friendly for major grocery stores to be in the inner city so that, you know, you've been in a poor neighborhood, you're like, that's the grocery store? You know, where it's not a major chain grocery store. It's a 99-cent store that also has fruit. You know what I mean?
Right.
That it's like that you said that if you made it so that it was friendly for those companies to move there. Because a lot of the gentrification happens. It's like people know their neighborhood's being gentrified when the 99-cent store closes down and a Whole Foods opens. They're like, oh, finally, but we can't afford to shop there.
Right.
You know, so you have to change the structures of the neighborhoods. You have to change the structures of how people are living their lives.
And there's no motivation to do that.
No, I think that the only hope that we have of that is that, you know, there's a professional sports. I look at that, like the money that is being made in professional sports, like a lot of these guys are going to go broke. But in 100 years, we'll be dealing with the Jordan Foundation the way we're dealing with the Rockefellers. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Magic Johnson did a lot of that.
That at some point, I hope that some of these people who have this, like, fuck you money can actually figure out a way to pour it back in. But they can't necessarily, like, charter schools. Like, Jalen Rose has a charter school that specifically in Detroit to go, I need to help jumpstart this situation myself. But it's hard to rely on individuals to do that. And until America goes, it's in our best interest to make poor neighborhoods better. And easier, and I'm not just talking about black, just in general, poor neighborhoods better, it will make a better country until the government feels like that's an important thing. And also, you know, we have this one president, Barack is pretty good and pretty liberal, but we don't know what the next one's going to look like, and then the next one's going to look like, until the country sort of as a whole goes, you know, that we get to that tipping point where we should, all the schools should be good.
Without a doubt.
Healthcare shouldn't bankrupt you.
No.
You know, you shouldn't have a car accident.
It's amazing that we have to even say these things.
Yeah. So
it seems like it should be like the staples of a culture.
Yeah. That, you know,
a community.
In the UK, they go, what do you mean you went broke because you got a broken leg or something, you know?
Well, I always think of in terms of what is the number one resource that we have in America. It's not natural resources, it's human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't America be stronger if there were less people that were losers?
Yes,
right.
Yes,
so what's
yes.
the best way to make less people losers? Work with children.
I feel like, yeah.
I think they should have community centers in any poor neighborhood should have a place where kids can escape that's really well staffed with mm-hmm. people that are excellent counselors, people that are teaching sports and martial arts and, mm-hmm. and places where kids can work on their studying. They could have computers to use to mm-hmm. access for books and all kinds of other shit so that they have a place where they can get in away from the crime. And just that alone will stop a lot of fucking crime.
Yeah.
And it'll give kids a place where they can they have a home away from home. They have something. So if their parents work during the day and they don't want to go home and just stare at the walls, they have somewhere to go to. They have yeah. people that they can look up to that can help them, counselors. And you're giving people more of a chance to be a successful human. When you do that, you're strengthening the country.
Yeah, that's and I don't think people see it that way. They see somehow like it's again to
hand out.
They're animals.
Pull yourself
anyway.
Out by your bootstraps.
Yeah, yeah, which to me is like
it's crazy.
It's crazy. And I think that people don't – it's so stupid. It's like if you have an infection in your finger and you let it go, it's going to kill you. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like you have to sort of go, we need to address this. And we can either address it now or we can wait until like, you know, do we have to burn down Ferguson, Missouri to get
or
people to go?
Or we can get more cops to patrol
yeah,
with my place in Connecticut.
Yeah. We need to get that kind. Our cops need tanks. Our cops definitely need tanks because those
gas
black people
masks.
In Ferguson. Yeah, yeah.
Cannons so, and drones.
That people don't take it. They don't take it seriously. And I think that's the until people go, oh, if stronger communities lead to a stronger America, there should be things, like you said, there should be things that are just taken for granted.
And you know how they're going to do that?
How?
Taxes from marijuana.
Yes, exactly.
That's
yeah.
how. That's yeah. my solution, ladies and gentlemen. Legalize marijuana, 39% tax like Colorado's doing, hundreds of millions of dollars at your disposal.
And I've heard the thing about the I don't know if they figured it out, but like because you're you You can't, because the federal government hasn't legalized marijuana. There's all this money that the pot dispensaries are making.
They're
but
slowly
they can't,
starting
they
to figure
can't put
out
it in the bank.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Just like, oh, come on, America.
Yeah. Well, that's the federal government trying to fuck with people. That's what it is. Yeah. Not only that, they're arresting people that are using these federal parks. Like, they're smoking weed in states where it's legal.
Yeah.
But they go to the park and they spark up a joint in a state park, and then the federal government comes in and arrests them.
Even though Barack Obama, I think, has been pretty clear about they're not trying to prosecute. The president of the United States says we're not trying to go after these things.
Well, he has been pretty clear about that. However, his administration in the DEA has prosecuted a lot of fucking people in states where medical marijuana is legal. The other thing they do, which is really cute, is they arrest people, they take all their weed, they take all their money, and then they say the case is pending. And they just have to sit there. And they don't do anything about it, but they stole $500,000 from them and $1 million worth of weed, and then just sitting there waiting to find out whether or not you're going to go to jail.
Yeah.
And some of them do. I have a friend who's gone to jail because of it. I know several people that have gone to jail during the Obama administration for selling medical marijuana that's legal. So he's kind of full of shit when it comes to that.
I like Barack. I'm not in love with him anymore. But
what happened? Did you guys break up?
We broke up.
What caused it?
What caused it? For me, the thing that actually caused it over and over again was every time there was like Troy Davis, the guy who was on death row in Texas, who people were like, the evidence says that he didn't do it. And there people were like, I remember on Twitter, people were like, say something, Brock, say something. And people were like, well, it's not his jurisdiction. Every time there's an issue that falls squarely on the head of black people in this country, and Barack sort of tippy-toes around it or doesn't address it head-on soon enough, I feel like that's why we elected a black president. That's why black people went out to vote, is because we wanted somebody who had our back. And every time he doesn't, and he can't fix problems. I don't expect him to fix things. But when it takes him 4 days to talk about Ferguson, and as he says, he didn't want to say anything too quickly, or he didn't want to say, because he didn't want to be seen as putting his thumb on the scale of justice, I'm like, oh, dude, that's why I elected you. Mm. I wanted your thumb on the scale of justice.
Yeah.
And that's because we need to jumpstart the system. And so for me, the stuff like that with, with the sort of and again, yes, if he talks about Trayvon Martin, people go, that's the job. The job is to get yelled at sometimes. The job is to have a hard week because you take a good stance.
If you take a stance anyway, you're going to get yelled at.
Yeah.
So pro or con?
Yeah.
If he took an Andrew Zimmerman stance, he would have got yelled at. George, whatever the fuck his name is. Or he took a Trayvon Martin stance. Whoever side he sided on, you're going to face an assault of opinion.
But my contention is that black people rallied around a black president because they're like, we need, born again Christians had a voice in the White House with George W. Bush, and George W. Bush did not hide his born again Christianness. He didn't. He said God all the time. He said we're God's, that stuff. Whereas Barack, he's clearly walking a fine line, which I get it. I wouldn't want to trade places with him. I wouldn't want to be the first black president. Or the fifth black president.
Or any president.
Yeah, or any president.
Or a white president.
But you did take the job. Yeah. You didn't get assigned the job.
Don't you think that job's unimaginably difficult and it almost is. Unmanageably difficult?
It is, but you took the job.
Yeah.
It is. But just, everything is, we all have our things we pick, and it's hard to do. It's hard to be a stand-up comedian, but we took the job. I'm not saying I'm not comparing it to being a president.
But I think a stand-up comedian, you can actually do it.
You can't, you get in the White House, you can't actually be the president. You're like, you're not really the president.
I think you get in there, man, you are faced with just a fucking tidal wave of special interest groups and money and pull and push.
I think it's probably similar to having your own late night talk show. They go, this is how it's done. You're going to do a cold opening, but I don't want to do a cold opening.
Except you never get to that Jon Stewart position where you tell everybody to fuck off.
No, because you don't get to be president for 20 years.
Well, he did it in two, but it's a lot. Show is not the country.
Yeah, no, it's not the country.
Yeah. Dude, we're out of time. We just did 3 hours.
I knew I was coming in here for the long haul, but
flew through.
I just was trying to keep the ball up.
That was fun. What are you doing next? Is there any? You have any projects in the works?
I do.
That people could look forward to.
Yeah, I do have a big project in the world. First of all, I'm taking a month off because my wife's going to have our second kid. But people can't look forward to that. But then in November, I'm going out on like my most extensive tour ever.
Okay. Tour. Cool. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's called the Oh Everything Tour.
And Everything.
Oh Everything. That's what's wrong? Oh Everything. So I will be hitting many markets that I've never hit before, and then places I love to go to. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
So your website.
WKAMAUBELL.com or Twitter and Facebook. I'm on W. Kamau Bell, at W. Kamau Bell. If you look up W. Kamau Bell, I'm the one at this point.
Dude, do an internet show, man. Just do your show on the internet.
You know, it's the like time's I said, come. Getting out of New York and, like, sort of the haze has been lifted and the storm has passed over, and I feel like, oh, I've just gotten back into stand-up again. I'm like, oh, it's the guy I remember that I was. Okay, yeah, but I'm a little bit wiser. I like this guy. So it's coming. I'm working on some stuff.
Beautiful. Listen, man, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation.
It's been an honor, man. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. All right. Kamau Bell, ladies and gentlemen. See you soon. Big kiss. Mwah.